This is Audible.
A Midsummer Night's Murder, a Shelby Nichols mystery novella, Shelby Nichols Adventure Series, written by Colleen Helm, narrated by Wendy Tremont King. To the real Molly May, thanks for letting me use your name. Chapter 1. It's never good to get a call from the police first thing in the morning. With summer in full swing, I didn't have to get up early to get my kids off to school. My husband Chris had already left for work, so the phone call from Detective Harris, a.k.a. Dimples, woke me up. "Hey, Shelby," he said. "Did I wake you?" I checked the time. Since it wasn't 8 o'clock yet, I decided to tell him the truth. "Yeah?" "Sorry. There was a murder last night. We brought in a suspect, but he's insisting that he didn't do it." "I could sure use your mad skills right now." Dimples is one of the few people who knows my mind-reading secret. I tell most everyone else that I have premonitions to explain what I do. That might seem like a cop-out, but I call it self-preservation. Plus, most people would freak out if they knew the truth. Who knows what would happen to me then? It's bad enough that a mob boss, whom I call Uncle Joey, knows my secret and coerced me into working for him. His hitman, Ramos, also knows my secret. He's one of those hot, sexy men that have women drooling just at the sight of him, me included. But since he saved my life more than once, I can't complain. Still, I hate to think what would happen if anyone else found out, and the lengths they'd go to use me for their own purposes. So, I figure that the fewer people who know the truth, the better. "Okay, I'll get ready and come in, but it will be about 45 minutes before I can get there." "That works. Thanks. See you soon." He disconnected before I could say another word, probably so I couldn't change my mind. I let out a sigh, remembering the day it all began. I'd been shopping at the grocery store for some carrots and got caught in the crossfire of a deranged bank robber. I took a bullet to the head. It was a minor injury, but it had left me with the ability to hear what people were thinking. Dimples was the detective assigned to my case back then, and ever since, I'd been helping him off and on with his hardest cases. His name is Drew Harris, but because he has these amazing dimples, my nickname for him stuck. He doesn't mind it too much, as long as I'm the only one who calls him that. Since I didn't have time to shower, I washed my face and tried to tame my long golden locks. My kids were still asleep, and I mentally went over the list of things going on today. Josh had to be at the country club at 9:30. He has the amazing job as a lifeguard at the big pool, mostly because of Uncle Joey's influence. He's only 15, so he doesn't drive, but he can ride his bike since it isn't far. At 13, Savannah could take care of herself, and since we didn't have plans for the day, it was easy for me to be at anyone's beck and call. Today, it was Dimples. Tomorrow, it could be Uncle Joey. I also had my own consulting agency, mostly because I felt it my duty to help people, since I had this crazy ability. But thankfully, I didn't have a lot going on there at the moment. I woke my kids up, explained that Dimples needed me, and grabbed a granola bar before hurrying out the door. My kids were getting used to my crazy work hours. They knew I worked for Uncle Joey and the police, but they didn't know I could read minds. They believed the lie that I had premonitions, and I hoped that they never found out the truth. Just thinking about how that could change things between us sent dread spiking through my stomach. My husband, Chris, had a hard enough time knowing I could hear his thoughts, so I was pretty sure my kids would hate it. I parked at the precinct and hurried inside. Dimples caught sight of me and let out a relieved breath. He was thinking that he'd made them wait to charge the suspect with murder until I got there. but the pressure from the prosecuting attorney's office was getting stronger by the minute.
"Glad you're here," Dimples began. "Let me tell you what I know. The victim, Molly May, was shot and killed during the night. A neighbor heard the shots and called the police. They found her dead, with the murder weapon lying beside her. The police questioned the neighbor who'd called it in. He told them he'd heard her arguing with her boyfriend earlier and gave them the boyfriend's description and the make of his car. After a quick search of the area, the police found the suspect in his car a couple of blocks away. They arrested him on the spot."
"What do you mean they arrested him? If he's a suspect, how can they arrest him?"
"Well, that's where it gets tricky. There was a warrant out for his arrest."
My brows rose with surprise. "What for?"
"He had some outstanding parking tickets. When they weren't paid, a judge issued a warrant."
"You mean you can go to jail for not paying a parking ticket?"
"That's insane." Dimples shrugged. "Unfortunately, it happens. The guy's name is Angel Molina, and he sounds pretty convincing to me. But I'm probably the only one who thinks he's telling the truth."
He thought with the police focusing on Angel as the murderer, the real killer could get away with it. And that's why he needed me. "Okay, let's go talk to him." Dimples led me to the interview room and ushered me inside. The man sitting at the table glanced up with red-rimmed eyes. With his olive skin and dark, wavy hair, he could have been Ramos's cousin. His hair was a little longer than it should be and poked up here and there because he'd run his hands through it so much. His face was rough with stubble, and his eyes were dark with pain. I opened my mind to him and picked up more sorrow than I'd ever felt from anyone. It washed over me in a wave of despair, and my throat tightened with emotion.
"Angel, this is Shelby Nichols, a consultant that works for us. She has a few questions for you."
I sat down in the chair opposite from him and swallowed to get some composure. I picked up enough to know that Molly May was someone he loved dearly. She was his lover and best friend, and now she was dead. Knowing that he'd never see her again pierced him with heartache and unbearable pain.
"Oh, Angel," I said, "I'm so sorry for your loss."
His eyes widened. I was the first person who even came close to understanding how much pain he felt that Molly was dead.
"Thank you."
He caught my gaze, and hope entered his heart. Maybe I was someone who'd finally listened to him.
"We need to find the person who did this to her."
"Yes," I agreed, knowing immediately that it wasn't him. "What can you tell me about last night?"
"It's like I told the others. Molly had been acting strange, more distant and irritable, but she wouldn't tell me what was wrong."
He was thinking that she was preoccupied, most likely because she was helping another student after he'd expressly told her not to.
"Then we got in a fight, and she kicked me out. My pride was hurt, and since she wouldn't listen to me, I left."
Angel rubbed his forehead and sighed.
"I should have been there. She might still be alive if I'd stayed."
By giving her an ultimatum about helping those kids, he'd thought to protect her. Instead, it had backfired, and now she was dead. "What did you do after you left?" I asked.
"I had nowhere to go, so I got in my car and drove around for a while, then I went back. The house was dark, so I parked a few blocks away where she wouldn't find me, and I fell asleep. I planned to go back and talk to her first thing this morning and make it right, you know? Get her to talk to me? Tell her I was sorry?"
"Sure. So then what happened?"
"The next thing I know, some cop is pounding on my window and yelling at me to get out of the car with my hands up. They didn't tell me why or anything. He just threatened to shoot me. Well, I opened my door and my dog started barking. She's a rescue animal I got at the shelter, and she's a little skittish with strangers. I tried to tell them about her, but they freaked out. One of them took a shot at her, and she yelped and took off. I don't know if she got hit or not, and I can't go looking for her.
Oh, no, that's awful. I glanced at Dimples with accusation.
Hey, this is the first I've heard about the dog.
He hadn't been in on the questioning, and no one mentioned anything about a dog.
We need to find her, I said to Dimples. Then I turned to Angel.
What's her name?
Pepper,
Angel replied. She's a mixture of border collie, lab, and beagle, and mostly black with some white on her chest. She might have gone back to the house, but if there are a lot of strange people around, I don't know how close she'd get. But if she's been shot, he closed his eyes and sighed. I can't lose her, too.
Let's get this figured out so you can get out of here, I said, hoping to encourage him. The pain and vulnerability in his eyes cleared, and a ray of hope shone through. He knew I believed him.
Yes. Okay, what can I do?
Well, Dimples said, I'm afraid I've got more bad news. They just discovered that the gun used to kill Molly is registered to you.
Shock rippled through him.
What? It's been tucked away, on the top shelf in the closet. I haven't used it in a long time.
Before I could respond, the door opened and two officers rushed in, followed by Detective Williams.
Angel Molina, you're under arrest for the murder of Molly May.
As the detective read him his rights, the officers pulled him to his feet and cuffed his wrists behind his back. Angel's breath caught, and his eyes widened.
No, I didn't do it. You've got the wrong man.
They pulled him toward the door, and he glanced back at me.
Find Pepper, please.
I will. His pain stabbed at my heart, and I glared at Dimples. He's innocent. How can they arrest him?
I'm sorry, Shelby. They must have probable cause, and with the warrant, I can't stop it.
Fine. Then you have to help me find his dog and clear his name. He nodded, but he knew it wouldn't be a priority, now that Angel had been arrested. Plus, the chief might not like him spending more time on the case.
Okay, let's get started with the dog. Why don't we call the pound first? Maybe she's already there. Does she have a collar or something?
I don't know. But why don't I call the animal shelter while you find the address to his house?
He blew out a breath. This was getting complicated, and he hoped for my sake that we didn't find a dead dog. He could just imagine how upset I'd be then.
Don't think like that. She's probably fine, just scared and hungry.
Dimples raised his brows, thinking it was best to be prepared just in case.
I didn't like hearing that, but since he'd only thought it, I decided I could ignore it. Back at his desk, he checked his computer for the information, and I found the number to the animal shelter. After talking with several people at the shelter, it didn't sound like she was there, so that meant it was off to the scene of the crime. Dimples had the address, and we headed to his car.
I think we'd better stop at the store for a doggy treat, I said, and maybe a leash or something.
Could you tell if it's a big dog?
Dimples asked. Not big. I'd say more on the small side. From her description and how he thought of her, she sounds adorable. I just hope she wasn't hurt, and we're not too late. We stopped at a pet store, and I bought treats, a small bag of food, and a leash. Dimples shook his head, thinking I was going overboard, but I wanted to be prepared.
Hey, Dimples said. Have you ever tried to read an animal's mind? That might be interesting.
No, I haven't. But I'm not sure I could. I mean, they don't speak English, do they?
He chuckled. Nope. But maybe you'll pick up something.
He hoped I did, because he'd always wanted to know what animals were thinking. Mostly about us humans. It could be groundbreaking. Maybe I'd even find a new calling at the zoo or something.
Ha ha. Dimples sent me a smile, and the dents in his cheeks got huge. wobbling in and out. The sight of them always brought a smile to my lips. He smiled even bigger, thinking how nice it was to tease me and lighten the mood. I chuckled. Sure, he could be funny, but it was his dimples that made me smile the most. Angel's car had already been towed away for evidence, but we stopped there first anyway. We both called the dog's name and held out treats in our hands. Dimples checked the ground where the car had been for a trail of blood, in case she'd been shot, and I opened my mind to see if I could pick up any doggy thoughts. "Did you find anything?" I asked him. "There's no sign of blood, so that's good. How about you?"
"Nope. Maybe she went back to the house?"
"I guess we should try there." Dimples started back to the car, but I stopped him.
"Why don't we walk? She could be anywhere along the way, and it's not far from here, is it?"
"No." Dimples pointed up the street. "It's that way. But if she's around, she'll probably be hiding in the bushes or some secluded place, especially if she's scared or injured."
"Yeah, you're right. I'll take this side of the street and you can look on that side."
We began our search, and I was grateful that it was mid-morning and not real hot yet. Plus, I'd worn some good walking shoes for a change. Along the way, I stopped to look under the bushes and any place a small dog could hide, calling her name and listening with my mind. By the time we approached the house, discouragement had set in. I had no idea if the dog had lived here long enough to know how to get back home, or if she'd gone in a completely different direction. Police tape ran across the front door, and a barricade had been set up across the driveway. But the crime scene van had left, and only one police car sat out front. Dimples told the police officer who we were, and we started around to the back of the house. Before Dimples opened the gate, a niggling presence of fear and confusion registered in my mind. I glanced to the side of the garage where it came from, and there, in the shadows of a lilac bush, I caught sight of a set of eyes and a black nose that morphed into a dog. My breath caught at her fear. Then I picked up a whine from her as I drew near.
"Hey there, Pepper," I said. "It's okay, you can come out. Look what I've got for you."
I held out the chewy treat, but she didn't budge, so I broke a piece off and tossed it to her. She eagerly gobbled it up and looked for more, so I kept tossing her little pieces until it was gone.
"Was that good? I've got some more."
I held out another piece, but instead of tossing it to her, I coaxed her to come to me for it. I picked up that she really wanted it, but she was still frightened.
"Pepper, come on. You can trust me."
I kept talking to her in soothing tones, and her reluctance gradually dissipated until she finally rose to her feet and inched toward me. After feeding her the treat, I held up my hand so she could sniff me. When she was done, I got out another treat. While she ate, I lightly patted her back. Then I found the collar around her neck and hooked the leash onto it. It felt weird to pick up her conflicting emotions of relief, fear, and trust. They were all there. But then the most profound thing happened. All at once, she accepted me. It was like her mind gained a perception that I was okay. I'd never gotten that from a person, so this was a new experience. As I made a fuss over her, she relaxed, and her fear was replaced by a sense of well-being. She didn't seem to mind the leash. With her dark eyes and black coat, she was delightful.
"With her coloring, it looks like she's wearing a tux," Dimples said.
He stepped cautiously to my side and offered his hand for her to smell, not wanting to spook her.
"Do you see any blood on her anywhere?"
We both examined her, but it didn't look like she'd been hurt. "She looks okay to me."
"What are you going to do now?" he asked me.
"I guess I'm taking her home." He was thinking, famous last words. Then he thought that since it didn't look good for Angel, I might end up keeping her.
She seemed so sweet that I didn't mind that too much, but since Angel was innocent, I had to make sure he got her back.
He's innocent, so now we just have to prove it.
Dimples nodded. It might explain a few things, but since this was such a cut-and-dry case, he wondered if maybe I'd been mistaken. Maybe Angel had buried the truth under layers of denial because he didn't want to believe he could actually do something like that.
He wasn't denying anything in his mind. I would know.
Oh, right. He'd forgotten that I would pick up on his stray thoughts, and he hoped he hadn't offended me.
It's okay. But no matter how it looks, he's still innocent.
Dimples nodded. But he thought it wasn't going to be easy to prove. Let's head back to the car and figure out our next move. We started back, and Pepper happily trotted by my side.
I think I'll take her home first. Then I'll come back to the precinct, so I can tell Angel we found her. Will I be able to talk to him?
Yeah. They'll be holding him until he's arraigned before a judge and bail is set. If he doesn't have a lawyer, they'll have to assign him a public defender.
He was thinking that, with murder charges against him, and the fact that he had a record, bail was probably out of the question. Even a good public defender wouldn't help him much.
Okay, I said. Then I guess I'll have to get him a good lawyer.
Dimples chuckled.
You mean like your husband?
I smiled back. Good thing I know one, right?
Let me just put it this way. If I was in Angel's shoes, I couldn't ask for a better team than you and Chris. He's lucky you came along.
A rush of warmth filled my heart, giving me hope that this could work out.
Now, I just needed to see if Chris could take the case. As a newly appointed partner at his law firm, I had no idea how busy he was, and I hoped it wouldn't be a problem.
There's another thing I caught from Angel, I said to Dimples. He thought that Molly was helping someone who might be dangerous, so I think that's a good place to start.
Now that's what I call a lead.
He smiled, and his dimples did that amazing tornado dance in his cheeks that never failed to bring a smile to my lips.
Chapter 2. After we arrived back at the precinct, I coaxed Pepper into my car and stashed all the treats and food I bought for her in the trunk. Pepper sniffed my car with enthusiasm, and I caught that she'd picked up the smell of my kids. That was weird. Maybe with a little practice I could read a dog's mind after all. At home, I urged Pepper from the car and into my house. I felt her trust, but she turned a little shy about coming inside, so I did my best to comfort her. She entered the kitchen slowly, sniffing at the smells and wagging her tail with her head down. I got the distinct impression that she was asking for my permission to be in the house.
Yes, you can come in, I said.
She lifted her head, and I could have sworn she smiled at me. Then she nudged my hand with her head for a rub.
Is that a dog? Savannah asked, coming into the kitchen.
She could hardly believe I had let a dog in the house.
This is Pepper, and she's a lab beagle mix of some kind.
She's adorable. Savannah crouched down beside Pepper and let the dog sniff her hand. Pepper took to Savannah like they were old friends. I left them to get acquainted and got the dog food out of the car. I grabbed a couple of bowls from my cupboard for her food and water, then fed her the correct amount for her size and weight on the package. While she ate, I told Savannah the story.
So are we going to keep her?
For now, yes. But once Angel is cleared, she'll need to go back to him. Savannah nodded her understanding, happy to have a dog, even if it was just for a few days. She'd always wanted a pet, but I'd never let her have one, so this was great. I guess she was right about that. I'd grown up with a dog, but then she'd died, and I didn't want to go through that again. But I'd forgotten all the good things a pet had to offer, and I felt bad that I hadn't been more open to the idea.
I need to go back to the precinct and talk to Angel. Do you mind taking care of Pepper?
You can let her out in the backyard. Just make sure the gate is closed, and don't leave her alone. She's been traumatized, so she needs the company. Was I reading my own feelings into this, or was it coming from the dog? I shook my head. How was I supposed to know? Sure, we'll be fine. Savannah was happy to have some company for the day, and I picked up the same feelings from Pepper. Who would have thought? After saying our goodbyes, I drove back to the precinct, eager to talk to Angel again. While I'd been gone, he'd been booked and placed in a holding cell until his arraignment. I had to wait several minutes before I could see him, and just being there sent my stomach into a queasy knot. I'd been in his position nearly a year ago, accused of a murder I didn't commit, and waiting there brought it all back. Finally, the police officer took me to his holding cell. Angel sat in the corner. As he caught sight of me, he hurried toward the bars, frantic and desperate for some good news. Did you find her? Yes, she's fine. A little scared, but fine. I took her to my house, and my teenage daughter is watching over her. He blew out a breath, and the tension left his shoulders. In relief, he leaned his forehead against the bars and said a silent prayer. After everything that he'd been through in the past few hours, his emotions were too much, and tears threatened to fall. He swallowed, struggling to speak. Thank you. Of course. Hey, if it's okay with you, do you mind if I ask my husband to take your case? He's a lawyer, and he's really good. His astonished gaze met mine. They already assigned me a lawyer. That's okay. You can tell them you've got someone else. I found one of Chris's business cards in my purse and handed it to him. Chris Nichols. Why are you helping me? You don't even know me. I smiled and shrugged. I believe in your innocence, and I want to help you prove it. He still wasn't convinced. He wondered if I had ulterior motives. If so, what were they? Knowing he couldn't make sense of it, I said the first thing that popped into my mind. You've got a sweet dog. Anyone who loves their dog like you do couldn't be a killer. You need my help, so let me help you. He shook his head. You need to know I don't have any money to pay a lawyer. I might be able to trade for some yard work or something, but I don't have any money saved up. That's okay. We'll worry about that later. I just need to know if there's anything more you can tell me about Molly. Was she a school teacher or something? Could a student have done this? His eyes widened. He didn't remember telling me anything about the students she interacted with, so how did I know that? She's not a teacher, but she works at a community college helping students that aren't doing well academically. He was thinking that was how he'd met her. She'd helped him get back on track to graduate with his undergraduate degree and get into business school at the university where he was now. She was a wonderful person, full of vitality and life. She shouldn't be dead. I think she may have been helping someone who probably didn't deserve it, he said. That person could have killed her. Do you know who it was? No. He shook his head with pain and regret. She likes helping students, but I thought she was getting too involved with them. Several are mixed up in a couple of gangs. I don't trust them or their motives, and I didn't like how personal the relationships were becoming. I told her she needed to stop and that it was dangerous. That's what we were arguing about, and I made that stupid mistake. You mean giving her an ultimatum? I asked, knowing he couldn't bring himself to say it out loud. Yeah, I never should have let it go that far. He was thinking that it was a mistake he'd regret for the rest of his life. Hey, you can't blame yourself for this. If you'd stayed, you might be dead too. I know that's not what you want to hear, but it's true. Right now, we need to find the killer. He nodded, but drowning in remorse, he couldn't look me in the eyes. Do you have any idea what gang these kids were in? I asked. He sighed. There's a couple of them. It could either be the 53s or the South Side. Maybe even the Polynesians, but I don't know for sure. That's okay. I'll see what I can find out. In the meantime, I'll talk to my husband about taking your case. Don't talk to the police without him with you, okay? He nodded, thinking that one of the detectives had already tried to get him to confess, but he'd refused to talk without a lawyer. At least he'd done that much right. Good. Hang in there. I'll be back with Chris.
Thanks, Shelby.
I left him, grateful that he seemed more hopeful. He even managed a smile, transforming his face for that tiny second into a handsome man any girl could fall for. More determined than ever to help him, I proceeded to my husband's law firm, pulling out my phone to make sure he was available. He didn't answer his cell, so I called the office, and his executive assistant picked up. Hi, Elisa. This is Shelby. Is Chris busy? I called his cell and he didn't answer. That's because he's with a client right now, she answered, but he shouldn't be too much longer. Okay, good. I'll be there in a few minutes. 15 minutes later, I stepped out of the elevator on his floor and followed the hall to his office. Elisa sat at her desk and glanced up as I came toward her. As usual, she looked fresh and charming in her orange sheath dress. How anyone could look good in that color was a mystery to me. But of course, it brought out her naturally beautiful warm skin tones. I tried not to let it bother me and smiled a greeting. She smiled back, thinking that I looked a little frumpy in my jeans and stretch pink top. My hair looked nice, but it could use a trim, and she thought I'd look better with bangs. What was that on my pants? Was that dog hair? Ew. I almost looked down at my pants to see the damage, but managed to keep my gaze on her. Is Chris done with his meeting? I tried to keep my tone light, even though I wanted to smack the frown off her face. Yes, you're in luck. His client left right before you got here. Before she'd even finished, I pushed his door open and waltzed in. Chris was writing on some papers and glanced up, surprised to see me. Hey, beautiful. I didn't expect to see you today. I let out a sigh. Seeing his handsome face always made my stomach flutter. He came out from behind his desk and pulled me into a hug. What's up? I need your help. His pleasant expression changed from happiness to alarm in a flash, and he was thinking, what have you gotten into now? Hey, I'm not in trouble. It's something else. In fact, it's not about me at all. Relief washed over Chris, and guilt flooded over me for what I put him through. Sure, I'd almost gotten killed a few times, but this was nothing like that, so he didn't need to worry. Dimples called me this morning about a murder, so I met with the suspect. Chris, I know he's innocent, but they're charging him with murder anyway. I was hoping you could take on his case.
Oh, sure.
He wasn't sure he could fit it in, but if he needed help, Ethan, the junior partner he was mentoring, could help.
Have they arraigned him yet?
No, he was assigned a defense lawyer, but he hasn't spoken to him yet. I just left him with your business card.
Okay, then I'd better call and let them know I'm representing him. What's...
His name is Angel Molina, I answered. He's accused of killing his girlfriend, and it doesn't look good. He also has a dog. Chris's brows drew together.
What has that got to do with anything?
Her name is Pepper, and she's staying with us.
Okay. I think you'd better tell me the rest of the story.
It didn't take long to fill him in on what little I knew. He had Elisa call the prosecuting attorney's office to let them know he was representing Angel as his attorney. She came into the office a minute later. If you're representing Angel Molina, they need you right now. They're ready to arraign him before the judge.
But I haven't even talked to him yet, Chris said, upset that the prosecuting attorney's office wasn't giving Angel a fair shake. Okay, hold my calls until I get back.
He turned to me.
Let's go.
It was a different experience to be on the lawyer side of things. Chris knew all the back ways into the building, and all I had to do was follow him. After we arrived, they brought Angel forward to stand before the judge. I quickly introduced Angel to Chris, and Chris told Angel not to say anything, and let Chris speak for him. Angel nodded, then sent me a glance full of relief and gratitude. The charges were read against him, accusing him of murder in the first degree. When asked how he pleaded, Chris answered, "Not guilty." They spoke about bail, and Chris did his best to arrange it, but the judge denied bail based on the charge of first-degree murder. He remanded Angel to await trial in the larger county jail. It was all over in a matter of minutes. They came to take Angel away, but Chris insisted he be allowed to talk to Angel first. With reluctance, they agreed to take us to a private room where we could chat. As we left, I heard Chris's name spoken with disgust in someone's mind. I glanced toward the back corner of the room and found the city's prosecuting attorney staring back at me. James Strickland didn't like Chris much, or me for that matter. He could hardly believe we were both there to defend a guilty man, thinking the evidence against Angel was ironclad, and he wasn't about to let Chris or me muck it up. Shaking his head, he decided to handle this case personally, so he could shove it in Chris's face when we lost. My stomach clenched with dread. Why did he have to be here?
Great. Chris glanced my way.
What?
James Strickland was in there. He's going to take over the case against Angel, mostly because of you.
Chris let out a breath and swore in his mind. He was thinking that ever since Strickland had lost the case against him and his client, Victoria Hampton, Strickland had held a personal grudge against him. It was like Strickland had made it his mission to make Chris's life as difficult as possible. An officer led us to a holding cell with a room for visitors attached. The three of us sat down at the table, and the officer stood outside the door.
"Thanks for taking my case," Angel said.
He'd observed Chris in the courtroom, and from what he'd seen, he thanked his lucky stars I'd insisted on having Chris represent him.
"I don't have a lot of money, but I'll pay you back for helping me."
"Don't worry about that," Chris said, waving his hand. "Our firm has a number of pro bono hours we've contracted with the state, so I'll put them toward your case." Chris was thinking that his firm had already used up the hours, but he didn't want Angel to worry about money right now.
"Oh, okay," Angel said, relieved. "Did Shelby tell you what happened?"
"Yes, but I'd like to hear it from you."
Angel told Chris everything that had happened, including the fight he'd had with Molly before she asked him to leave.
"I never should have left her."
"Do you have any idea who would want to kill Molly?"
"The only thing that comes close might be a student she was helping."
He repeated everything he told me about the gang affiliation some of her students had.
"Okay," Chris said. "This is what we're going to do. I'll go over a copy of the police report, so I'll know what they're basing the charges on. Shelby will do some detective work and find out who these students were, and we'll go from there."
"I didn't do it," Angel said.
In full lawyer mode, Chris concentrated on doing the job of defending his client, and guilt or innocence didn't matter to him. In fact, he preferred not to know. Still, he met Angel's gaze.
"Then I guess we'll just have to make sure we win."
We spoke to Angel for a few more minutes, then left him behind and began the walk back to Chris's office.
"I'll send Ethan to Strickland's office to get the police reports and any other documents relative to the case. Then we can try for a preliminary hearing and see if we can get the case dismissed."
He was thinking that if Strickland had anything to do with it, the charges were probably based on evidence he'd obtained at the crime scene. That meant that everything had probably been done by the book, and there wasn't a chance he could get the case thrown because of a technicality. Good thing he had me on his side.
"Do you think we can win this case?" I asked, worried that because of Strickland's animosity toward Chris, it might make it harder to win.
Yes, he grinned. You know he's innocent, so there's got to be a way to prove it.
I nodded, grateful he believed me. But I knew it wouldn't be that easy. Maybe I should go with Ethan when he talks to Strickland. That way I can pick up everything Strickland has, but isn't willing to share with you.
Chris nodded, but he wasn't sure that was a good idea.
Why not? His lips thinned, but he decided he might as well tell me the truth, since I'd just pick it up from his mind anyway.
Because he's not going to be thinking nice things about you, and it will probably hurt your feelings.
I laughed. Oh, Chris, you don't have to worry about that. I hear things that hurt my feelings all the time. I'll be fine.
He thought I would say that, but who was the one who had to listen to me complain?
Him. Not that he minded, but still, hey, I can take it. And I haven't complained that much.
Okay, fine, he said, thinking he'd done his best to protect me.
On the other hand, he had to agree that it wouldn't hurt to know what Strickland might be holding back. Sending me with Ethan was like sending a secret weapon, giving Chris an edge, and it felt mighty fine to be one up on the enemy. I think I like being your secret weapon, I grinned. I'll do my best.
Chapter 3. Back at the firm, Chris called Ethan to his office and explained what he needed.
Shelby is going with you.
Ethan glanced at me with widened eyes.
Why?
He knew about my premonitions, and it made him nervous.
I mean, I can take care of this.
His gaze turned to me.
Not that I don't want your company, but you really don't have to come with me.
Oh, I'm sure you don't need me, but I'd like to see how it all works, I said. I promise I won't get in your way. In fact, you'll hardly notice I'm there at all.
He was thinking, then why come? But he just nodded instead.
Then it hit him that it must have something to do with my premonitions. Had I picked up something that was going to happen at Strickland's office? But what difference would that possibly make, whether I was there or not?
Shall we go now? I asked, hoping to get him moving.
Oh, sure, let me get my jacket.
I sent Chris a smile and followed Ethan to his desk, where he slipped on his suit coat. He grabbed a file folder for something to carry and stuck a pen in his pocket. After sending me a thin-lipped smile, we started for the elevator. We spoke about the weather and other mundane topics until we reached the prosecuting attorney's offices. Ethan knew right where to go, so I followed him to James Strickland's office. I picked up a bit of nervousness, along with the hope that Strickland kept our meeting entirely professional and didn't give anything about their relationship away. What did he mean by that? We stopped at the executive assistant's desk, and she smiled warmly at Ethan.
Hi, Ethan. What can I do for you today?
Ethan didn't want me to know how well he knew Strickland or his secretary. But she was ruining everything.
Hi, Gwen, he motioned toward me. This is Shelby Nichols. We are here because we're representing a client, and we need to get a copy of the police report. It would be nice to have a quick word with Strickland, too.
Oh, of course. What's the name? She asked.
Angel Molina, I said, filling in the blank, since Ethan had gotten a little tongue-tied looking at Gwen's cleavage. She nodded, then pushed her chair back and stood.
Just a minute.
After knocking on Strickland's office door, she quickly entered, leaving us to wait. A moment later, she came back out holding a folder.
You can go in.
Thanks, Ethan said.
I followed Ethan inside, picking up his sudden uneasiness, which sent little twists of discomfort down my spine. From Ethan's thoughts, I knew Strickland held something over Ethan's head, reminding me of how Uncle Joey did business. Strickland sat at a desk in an office that was bigger than the others I'd seen, but nothing near as nice as Chris's. The prints on the wall
along with the furniture, were second-hand at best. For the office of the city's prosecuting attorney, I thought it would be nicer. But Strickland's polished demeanor, combined with his shrewd strength and ambition, left no doubt that the furnishings had nothing to do with the lofty office of prosecuting attorney. That was all him. He didn't bother to stand, instead waving us to sit in the chairs in front of his desk.
"Gwen told me you're here for the police report on Angel Molina," he said, ignoring me and speaking to Ethan. "I'm surprised your firm is representing him."
He glanced at me, thinking that I was the reason Chris had taken the case, so how was I connected to Angel?
"Is he a friend?"
Both men waited for my response, so I shrugged. "I've never met him before today, but I believe he's innocent." Strickland gave me a polite smile that didn't quite reach his eyes.
"And you're basing that on what? Intuition? Because everything we have points to him."
I didn't like his fierce gaze, so I went on the defense. "What does it matter to you?" My response surprised him, and he shrugged.
"Well, I guess it doesn't. I just hate to waste the court's time. But I suppose everyone's entitled to their day in court."
He glanced back at Ethan.
"I'll work up a plea deal for your client, but it won't be for less than 30 years, and that's only if he admits it wasn't premeditated."
"Sure," Ethan said, standing. "Thanks, we'll be in touch." "Wait," I said, urging Ethan to sit back down. "What evidence do you have that Angel killed Molly? I mean, sure, you found him asleep in a car a block or two away, but why would he still be there in the neighborhood if he was guilty?"
"It's all there in the police report," Strickland said, not about to tell me. His mind went to the reasons, and I picked up that the murder weapon had been wiped clean, but it was registered to Molina. There was no sign of forced entry, suggesting the victim knew her killer, and the neighbor had heard him arguing with the victim. Opportunity, motive, and the murder weapon. It all pointed to Molina, no matter where they'd found him. "Now, if you'll excuse me," Strickland said, standing, "I have work to do."
With a sigh, I stood, knowing I wasn't going to get any more out of him. Ethan gestured me to go out of the office first. Once I entered the hallway, Strickland called Ethan back, speaking in a low voice that I wasn't supposed to hear. Good thing I could read his mind. He told Ethan that he was determined to win this case, and it was up to Ethan to make sure it happened. Strickland rationalized it by saying it was an election year, and he needed the win. Besides, Ethan owed him, and he didn't want this to drag out, especially when it was clear the guy was guilty. Ethan swallowed and nodded, but hurried to follow me, concerned that I would get suspicious if he was too friendly. We stopped at the assistant's desk, and she handed Ethan Angel's file with the police report. "See you later," she said, thinking that Ethan was cute, and she wished he still worked in the office. Ethan took the file, thanked her, and hardly noticed the smile she sent his way. Seeing Strickland always sent his pulse racing with dread, and this time was no different. He hoped that I hadn't picked up on the tension between them, and anger that Strickland had been such a dick in front of me tightened his stomach. Couldn't the guy at least try to be nice once in a while? We left the building and began our walk back to Chris's office, so I took the opportunity to question him while we were alone. "I didn't know you used to work there. Was Strickland your boss?" Ethan inhaled so fast he choked on his spit. He coughed a few times until he got his breath back.
I didn't really work there."
He was thinking that statement was indirectly true, since it was an internship, and he hadn't been paid, so it couldn't be called work in the true sense. My brow puckered. Why was he lying to me?
Not about to let it go, I continued. Oh, so it was an internship, right?
Ethan's eyes widened, and he swore in his mind. How did I know that? Was it my psychic abilities?
Oh, that, yeah. But it was just for a few weeks, and I worked for the whole department, not just Strickland.
So is that how he knows you?
Yeah, he admitted, unhappy that I'd gotten it out of him. His brow furrowed. Now that I knew, he felt like he needed to do some explaining so it didn't look bad. But how much should he tell me? To be honest, they offered me a job, but I got a better offer at your husband's firm. I don't think we left on the best of terms.
Really? Strickland didn't seem to have a problem with you. I think it was me he objected to. Plus, he can't stand Chris. Any idea why?
Ethan chuckled. That's easy. Chris wins more cases than he loses, and Strickland doesn't like that.
He was thinking that Strickland also didn't like Chris's biggest client. It was the whole reason Ethan worked for Chris's firm.
My brows rose. He was thinking about Uncle Joey and Strickland's obsession with taking the mob boss down.
Would you rather be a prosecuting attorney?
No, I'd rather do anything but that, he answered. And the law firm is great,
which made it hard to follow through on Strickland's stupid deal. But Strickland had him over a barrel. If Ethan wanted to keep practicing law, he had to stay on Strickland's good side. I wanted to ask him what Strickland had on him, but decided to wait until I could tell Chris what was going on. I was sure Chris would want me to find out, mostly because he liked Ethan. That meant he'd want to help Ethan out. I just hoped it didn't get Chris in trouble. We found Chris in his office, and Ethan gave Chris the police report.
I'd like to help with this, Ethan said. Is it okay if I look it over?
Yes, Chris answered.
That would be great. Check it first to see if Angel's rights were violated at any time during his arrest. Then I want to know what kind of evidence they have against him.
Sure, Ethan said. He nodded at me and left the office. Chris smiled with anticipation.
So, did you get anything?
Yes. You already know that Strickland doesn't like you, but he's got something on Ethan. Did you know Ethan interned for him?
Chris's eyes widened with surprise.
Strickland wants to win this case, so he's asking Ethan to help him do that. And you're playing right into his hand.
What does Strickland have on Ethan?
I don't know, but it must be big. Chris sighed.
Then you'll have to find out for me, so I can help him.
I was afraid you'd say that. I shook my head. But just so you know, the big fish Strickland is after is Uncle Joey. And I think it goes all the way to the district attorney's office. That's why Ethan's been spying on you.
Strickland should know he can't get to Minetto through me.
If you make a mistake, he can. Strickland was thinking that if you gave Uncle Joey any kind of advice about how to break the law, they could arrest you. Is that really something they can do?
Chris's brows furrowed. Yes, but how would they ever know what I told Minetto?
I guess from Ethan, if he recorded it or something.
Well, I'll just have to make sure he's not involved in any of my meetings with Minetto.
My breath caught. Since Chris didn't deny it, did that mean he actually told Uncle Joey how to break the law?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Chris smiled, thinking he'd never done that, and he hoped he never had to. But since I was involved with Minetto, he couldn't say he wouldn't. If it meant keeping me out of jail, he'd probably do just about anything.
Thanks, honey. But let's hope that never happens.
You don't have to convince me.
So what happens next with Angel? I asked.
Well, that all depends on the evidence. If it's all circumstantial, they might not even have a case.
Strickland was thinking about offering a plea, but it wouldn't be for less than 30 years.
Chris let out a huff.
That's hardly a plea.
Yeah, but at least I have some leads I can follow up on with the students Angel was talking about.
About that. Do you think you could get Dimples to go with you?
Chris was thinking that it wouldn't hurt to have a gun-carrying detective with me, since all I carried around was my stun flashlight. Hey, I'll have you know my stun flashlight has come in handy more than once. But don't worry, Dimples said he'd help me with this.
Good. You'll probably get more information from him than what they gave me in the police report. Just try not to let the chief know about it. He could kick you off the case if he knows you're working for me.
I see what you mean. But I'm not technically working for you. I'm working for the police, since Dimples called me first, so it should be okay.
Chris nodded, thinking that explanation might work, as long as Strickland didn't get wind of it.
Too bad I'd gone with Ethan and shown my hand. But there wasn't anything he could do about it now. I guess you're right about that. So I'd better get going. Call me if you need anything else.
He said he would, then gave me a kiss and I left his office. I headed back to the precinct to see if Dimples had the information I needed and found him at his desk. Hey, Shelby, he said. I heard Chris took the case.
Yes, we've already talked to Angel. Now we need to do some detective work. Want to help me?
Dimples pursed his lips and glanced at his watch. Officially, no. But I haven't had my lunch break, so I can take an hour to help.
Seriously? So once someone's been arrested, you're off the case? What if it's the wrong guy?
He shrugged. It all depends. I might be able to keep at it if there's a good lead to follow. Where do you want to start?
I think we should talk to Molly's co-workers and her neighbor. It would go a lot better if you were with me.
I didn't tell him about the other person I intended to talk to,
mostly because it was Ramos, and he was Uncle Joey's hitman. But if this was gang-related, he was my best source to find the killer.
Dimples brought up the information on Molly May in the police database on the computer. His colleague, Detective Williams, had already filed the report on her death, so he clicked it open. It listed all the pertinent details of her murder, including the information I needed, of where she worked, and the neighbor's name, Hunter Smith. Dimples wrote it all down, and we stood to leave.
Have they notified her next of kin? I asked.
Yes. Her sister came in while you were gone.
Dang. I wish I could have been there. How did she take it?
She was crying when she left. But I wasn't in the room, so I don't know, he said. I'm pretty sure they told her that Angel was arrested. But whether she thought that was a good thing or not, I don't know. We could talk to Williams real fast if you want.
I liked Detective Williams, and he didn't have a problem with me, like some of the others.
Okay. We found Williams finishing up his lunch in the break room. We need to talk to you, Dimples said. Williams threw the remains of his lunch bag in the garbage and nodded. Sure, what's up?
We want to ask you a couple of questions about the murder this morning, I said.
Williams took a breath and held it, not wanting to have to defend his actions to me. I was with Angel Molina in the interrogation room when he was arrested, so Williams already knew I was unhappy about it. Still, he was confident that they'd caught the right guy, and he didn't see the point in talking with me. I jumped in before he could brush me off.
I was just wondering what your thoughts are about the case. Do you feel confident that Angel did it, or do you have some doubts?
Since I'd been more open than he expected, he spoke honestly. It came together faster than normal, but that doesn't mean we didn't catch the right guy.
I nodded. That makes sense. How about Molly's sister? Did she think Angel killed Molly?
Actually, no, he said, frowning. She had a hard time believing it. She said Angel and Molly seemed like they were made for each other. I asked her if she had any idea about what their argument might have been about, but as far as she knew, they got along great.
so she didn't see any red flags pointing to anger issues or abuse of any kind from Angel?
No, she didn't.
Now that Williams thought about it, he worried that they'd been too hasty. Maybe they should have followed up on a few other leads.
Have you spoken with her co-workers? I asked.
No. Once we discovered that the gun belonged to Angel and there was a witness to his argument with the victim, it wasn't necessary.
Okay. Thanks.
I gave him a big smile, then pulled Dimples away with me.
Hey, where are you going?
Williams asked.
Out? For lunch?
Williams nodded, knowing I was lying, and probably headed to the victim's office.
Okay, let me know if you find anything. I'd hate for the wrong man to go to prison.
This time my grin was real.
Will do.
After stopping for a sandwich, Dimples drove us to Molly's place of employment. She worked at a community college in their administrative offices as a completion coach. With summer semester in full swing, the campus had plenty of young people attending classes. We found the administration department and introduced ourselves to the secretary.
We're here about Molly May, Dimples said, and we'd like to speak with her boss.
The secretary's eyes widened, and she wondered if Molly was in trouble, since she hadn't come in.
Sure. Is something wrong with Molly?
I glanced at Dimples. He was thinking that I should listen real close while he told her about Molly in case she had something to do with it.
Yes, Dimples said. I'm sorry to tell you this, but she was killed last night.
The secretary gasped, and her face paled.
Oh, no. Was it an accident?
He shook his head.
No, she was murdered.
Shock rippled through her.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. What happened? Who killed her?
That's what we're hoping to find out, I said, catching her attention. Do you know of anyone who would have reason to want her dead?
Me?
She squeaked.
No, I have no idea.
She was thinking that Molly had the hard job of telling students that they were failing in school. But that was no reason for anyone to kill her.
If you think of anything that could help us, will you let us know?
Dimples asked, handing her his card.
Oh, sure.
Good.
Now, can we talk to her boss?
Oh, right. Follow me. Her office is this way. She led us down a hall to a big office. The door was open, and a woman sat behind a large desk, wearing reading glasses. At our approach, she pulled the glasses from her face and glanced at us expectantly.
Hi, Lorna. Sorry to interrupt, but these are detectives from the police. They want to talk to you about Molly,
the secretary said. Lorna stood and held out her hand for us to shake while we introduced ourselves. Please, have a seat, she said, motioning us to the chairs in front of her desk. What's going on with Molly? She was thinking it was strange that Molly hadn't come in today, especially when she usually called or sent a text.
We're sorry to tell you that she's dead. She was killed last night.
Dimples waited a moment for Lorna's shock to subside before he continued.
We're here to ask if you or any of Molly's co-workers could provide us with any information about her and her life. Was she close to anyone here that she might have confided in?
Lorna swallowed her shock and tried to think about who had a friendship with Molly. Drawing a blank, she shook her head.
Her faculty advising team would be a good place to start. I think she and Brittany are close, so you should start with her.
Brittany's the secretary in charge of the drop-in center.
Thanks, Dimples said. Where can we find her?
The advisement drop-in center is on the third floor of this building. I can have Gwen take you there if you'd like.
Sure,
Dimples agreed. We soon followed Gwen to the third floor, where she introduced us to Brittany.
a slender woman in her early 20s with long brown hair. She glanced up from her computer as we approached.
"These are detectives from the police who'd like to speak with you about Molly," Gwen said.
Brittany's brows rose in surprise.
"What's going on?"
Dimples hated this part, but forged ahead.
"Molly's been killed. We'd like to ask you a few questions."
Brittany gasped, and her hand flew to her mouth.
"What? She's dead? How?"
"That's what we're trying to find out," he continued.
He turned to Gwen, who seemed more than happy to stay and listen.
"Thanks for bringing us."
She took the hint and left. He turned back to Brittany.
"May we sit down?"
"Of course. I'm sorry. I should have offered you a seat. I'm just so shocked. I can't believe she's dead."
"I understand it's a shock."
After sitting, Dimples continued.
"Can you tell us about Molly? Do you know why someone might want her dead?"
Thoughts whizzed through Brittany's brain about who could have killed Molly. She finally settled on the only one that made sense. Maybe it was her work to help those people that had backfired. But why would someone like that turn on her? "Who was she helping?" I asked. Brittany closed her eyes and took a deep breath.
"She helped the high-risk students, those whose grades were failing, and who were in jeopardy of dropping out. But she did more than that. I know she became involved in their lives, and she took an interest in them as people, not just students. I can't believe someone killed her. She was just the sweetest person."
Tears formed in her eyes, and her hands shook as she wiped them away.
"Did you know her boyfriend?" Dimples asked.
"Angel? Yes, of course. He was one of the first students she helped. It's been a couple of years ago. She fell for him almost immediately, even though she was older."
She glanced at us, and her brow puckered.
"Why?"
"He's been arrested for her murder," Dimples said.
"What? That's impossible. He wouldn't kill her. He loved her. There has to be a mistake."
"That's what I think," I said. "So it has to be someone else. Who has she been helping recently?" Brittany glanced at her computer.
"I'm not sure, but we could take a look at her desk. Maybe there's something on her calendar."
We followed her into a nearby office with a desk and computer. A framed picture of Molly and Angel sat behind the pencil holder, and I realized I'd never seen Molly until now. She had big brown eyes and long dark hair that framed a beautiful oval face. Angel had wrapped his arms around her from behind, and they were smiling with happiness. My heart filled with sadness for them both, and I let out a sigh before glancing through the papers on her desk. Brittany brought up the calendar on Molly's computer.
"It looks like she's been meeting with several students over the last few weeks, but the one with the most appointments is Jackson Ward."
She looked him up on the computer database and checked his schedule.
"It looks like he's in class right now. Do you want to talk to him?"
"Yes," I said. She printed out his class schedule and handed it to me.
"His classroom is in the annex building just across from this one, room 133.
"Thanks," Dimples said. "We'll want a list of all the students Molly's helped in the last few months. Could you get that ready for us? We'll come back after we talk to Jackson."
"Sure, I'd be happy to. You might want to hurry because class is just about to end."
We thanked her and rushed out of the building, finding Jackson's class while everyone was still there. At the door, Dimples didn't hesitate and walked right in, interrupting the teacher.
"Excuse me, but we need to speak with Jackson Ward. Is he here?"
The teacher glanced toward the back of the class at a young man with dark hair and eyes. His jeans had several holes in them, and he wore a graphic T-shirt. His startled gaze jerked toward us, and panic set in. He had no idea what we wanted, but seeing Dimples' badge was enough to get his heart pumping.
He stood, ready to bolt. I quickly moved in front of the door and offered him a smile that did little to curb his alarm. As he came abreast of me, I spoke.
"We just have a couple of questions, then you can finish up in here."
My explanation brought a degree of relief from him, but not as much as I'd hoped. We moved out into the hall, and Dimples began.
"We're here because we'd like your help. One of the faculty advisors, Molly May, was murdered last night, and we just found out she met with you a few times. Did she confide in you about anything that was bothering her, or do you know of someone who disliked her?"
"Molly?" He leaned back against the wall in disbelief and astonishment. "Someone killed her? I just talked to her yesterday." He could hardly believe she was dead. What had happened? Sudden guilt washed over him. It couldn't be because of him, could it?
"Let's go sit down," I said, taking his elbow and urging him toward the open foyer with a group of couches and chairs.
He followed without a word and sat down heavily, still reeling in shock.
"Do you have any idea who might have done this?" I asked.
"No,"
he said, refusing to share his suspicions, especially because he didn't want to believe it himself.
I let out a sigh and knew I had to tread carefully or he'd bolt. With sudden dread, he put his head in his hands and leaned his elbows on his knees. He shook his head in disbelief that she was dead and raked his hands through his hair. The movement exposed the tattoo on his upper arm, just below the hem of his sleeve. I'd seen that same tattoo on Angel Molina's arm, and my stomach tightened.
"Jackson?" I said, getting his attention. "I've seen a tattoo just like the one on your arm recently."
"What does it mean?" I pointed to the tattoo, and he jerked away from me.
"Nothing. It's just a cool design."
But he was thinking that it was the gang symbol, and he didn't want us to know. Poking around the gang could get him in trouble or dead. And for the 100th time, he wished he had the money to get it removed.
"Do you know Angel Molina?"
I hated to ask, but I had to know.
Jackson straightened and caught my gaze.
"I don't know him." But he knew about him. Angel was one of the first to leave the gang. It had given him, and some of the others, the courage to follow in his footsteps and make something out of their lives.
"But what did that have to do with Molly's death?"
he wanted to ask me, but now he couldn't.
"Can you tell us anything that might help us find her killer?" I asked.
"We know she was helping you. Did she mention anything that was troubling her?" He shook his head.
"No, I don't know anything.
When I talked to her yesterday, she was fine. But she did seem on edge, and he knew something was bothering her. If I knew, I would tell you. She was a good person. She didn't deserve to die." I glanced at Dimples. He was wondering if I was done or if I needed more time. Since there were two questions, I had to nod for the done part, and shake my head for the more time part, and hope he got the message. His lips tilted up, and he turned to Jackson.
"Thanks for your time. If you think of anything that could help us catch her killer, please don't hesitate to call."
He handed Jackson his card, and we stood. As the classroom doors opened and students began to trickle out, Jackson took the card and blended in with the crowd.
"Should we go?"
Dimples asked.
"Or do we need to go back for the list?"
I shrugged. "We might as well get the list, but I'm not sure we need it."
"Why, what did you pick up?"
"It's not good for Angel. It looks like both he and Jackson belong to the same gang. That seems to be the tie to Molly. It sounded like she's helped quite a few of the gang members leave the gang, and Angel was the first."
"Did you get the name of the gang?" he asked.
"No, but you saw the tattoo on Jackson's arm. Is there a way to find out what gang it is from the tattoo?"
"I'm sure we can find it in the police database."
With a heavy heart, we left the campus, stopping by Molly's office to pick up the list of people whom Molly had helped. Back at the precinct, we combed through the database looking at gang tattoos. I probably could have asked Angel, but he already felt guilty enough, and I didn't want to add to it. West 53, that's the one. I pointed to the tattoo, with the 5 and 3 intertwined to make them into a stylized graffiti-type symbol. What do you know about them?
Not much, Dimples said, but they're involved in some pretty bad stuff.
He was thinking drugs, crime, murder, the whole 9 yards. I wondered what Uncle Joey and Ramos thought about them. Did they have an arrangement with them, like some of the other gangs? Either way, it looked like I needed to find out, especially if I was going to clear Angel's name. Could Molly's death have been a hit that they'd ordered? But why would they want her dead? Or was it more to do with Angel and the fact that he'd left the gang? If so, why hadn't he thought of that possibility?
Do you think the gang killed Molly because of Angel? Dimples asked.
I don't know. He didn't even think of that as a possibility, so I'm a little confused. Of course, it's been a couple of years since he left. I checked my watch. All this chasing around had taken most of the day, and I needed to talk to one more person. I'm going to call it a day.
All right, Dimples said, but he studied me with apprehension. Just don't go after anyone without me, okay?
Don't worry about that. He smiled, but he was thinking that I had other resources I could go to, and he'd rather I steered clear of Minetto and his hitman, Ramos. But that was probably wishful thinking on his part. I was probably headed over there right now. No, I'm not, I said, lying through my teeth. I'm going home. Dimples just shook his head and watched me go.
Chapter 4. As I headed over to Thrasher Development, guilt burned a hole in my chest, but I pushed it away. If it helped get Angel acquitted, I needed to talk to Ramos, even if Dimples didn't like it. Even better, I could catch the real killer, which was just as important. I drove into the parking garage and sat in my car. Uncle Joey didn't like me working for the police, so I wasn't sure it was a good idea to talk to him right now. Ramos didn't either, but he would probably have some great information on the gang, so it was worth the risk of involving him. Instead of heading up to the office, where I might run into Uncle Joey, I took my phone out and called Ramos.
"Babe," he answered, "what's up?"
"Hey," I replied in my perky voice. "I'm working on something and could use your help."
"What kind of help?"
he asked, his voice guarded. Since I couldn't read his mind over the phone, I could imagine his reluctance to get involved, since it usually meant I was in trouble. "I'm not in trouble," I said. "I just need to know a few things about a gang."
"Which one?"
They're called the West 53. Have you heard of them?"
From the silence on the other end, I figured he had.
He let out the sigh I'd been expecting.
"Where are you?"
In the parking garage at Thrasher Development."
"I'm on my way down."
He didn't sound real happy about helping me, but I hoped he didn't mind too much. I got out of my car and watched the elevator for his arrival. The doors slid open and he stepped out. I waved to get his attention, and he started over, bringing all that badass glory with him. Ramos exuded danger. Along with his Latino good looks and hunky body, it was enough to send any woman's heart into torrid palpitations, and I was no exception. He reached my side, standing a little closer than was strictly necessary, and cocking his eyebrow.
What the hell was I into this time? West 53? Don't tell me you're mixed up with them.
I caught the concern behind his intimidation tactics and let out my breath. Grateful he didn't scare me. Much?
No, not at all. I just need some information.
His shoulders relaxed, and he leaned back against the car beside me. Shaking his head, he caught my gaze.
Why?
Dang. Now I had to tell him that I was working for the police. Or maybe I could leave that part out and tell him that Angel was my client, and I needed to know so I could get him out of jail. That should work.
Well, I have a client, Angel Molina, I began, and told him the whole story.
So, now you know why I need to find out about the gang. Do you think someone in the gang could have murdered Molly to get revenge against Angel?
No.
He shook his head, thinking there had to be more to it.
But it probably has something to do with her murder. You said she'd helped more than one gang member?
Yes. From what I could gather, Angel was the first of several.
Why?
He shrugged.
Could be they don't like their members leaving. But I don't know why they'd kill her.
It made more sense that they'd kill Angel before they killed her.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I glanced up at him with a hopeful gaze.
Do you know anyone in the gang we could talk to?
His brow rose at the "we" part of that question, and his lips twitched at my brazen request.
You really want to talk to them?
Well, you have to admit that I should be there, you know. Letting out a breath, he nodded, knowing my mind-reading skills would come in handy, but not sure he wanted me there.
But what could he say? No, I won't do it. I'd probably just find someone else to help me, like that detective I called Dimples. And then, who knew what would happen?
All right, he agreed.
I know where to find them. If you insist on coming, you have to keep your mouth shut and let me do all the talking.
He cocked his brow again and waited for me to agree.
Sure, I said, shrugging. How soon can we meet with them?
I can text him right now. If he's available, we can meet him any time.
Great. How about now? Are you busy?
He chuckled and checked his watch.
Not for another hour or two.
I listened to his thoughts, but he'd closed off his mind pretty tight. He knew how to do that around me, and he did it well. So now I had to wonder what he would be busy doing in a couple of hours, and if it involved a woman or something illegal for Uncle Joey.
Whoa, that was none of my business,
and I really didn't want to know. So I smiled instead.
Great.
Ramos pulled out his phone and sent the text. After waiting a few seconds, he got a response.
Looks like you're in luck. We can go now. You want to take the bike?
Yes. I knew it was bad to sound so enthusiastic, but going for a ride in the back of Ramos's Harley was one of my favorite things, mostly because the bike was hot and fast. Yeah, right. Who was I trying to kid? I enjoyed sitting behind Ramos, with my arms wrapped tightly around him even more. Because it was summer, and I'd had to go to the precinct, I wasn't wearing my usual motorcycle gear. But that wasn't about to stop me. I'd worn my dressier jeans and a fitted blouse, which would still look great behind Ramos. Not that it mattered. No one would look twice at me, anyway, with Ramos in front. I followed Ramos toward the elevator and around the corner where he parked his bike. His car was also there, and he popped the trunk, retrieving both helmets. I pulled my hair away from my face and twisted it into a loose bun, then took the helmet and slid it on. As I fastened the strap under my chin, Ramos shook his head, thinking that I'd been so excited to ride the bike that I didn't even think to ask where we were going. Then he shrugged, thinking it probably didn't matter. I glanced his way and smiled.
Nope, not one bit.
He grinned, then got on the bike and waited for me to set the pegs down before I slipped my leg to the other side.
Once I was settled, Ramos started her up, and I tightened my hold around his waist. He eased out the clutch and pulled on the gas. In one smooth motion, we took off up the ramp and out to the street. I leaned with the bike around the corner, and we merged into traffic. It wasn't long before we'd left the downtown area and were headed to the west side of town. 20 minutes later, we pulled through a crowded strip mall next to a car repair shop. Ramos turned down a narrow side street that ran behind the strip mall and stopped at one of the back door entrances. I got off the bike and he followed. Then he snapped our helmets into the lock below the seat. I shook my hair out, hoping it wasn't too flat against my head, and waited while Ramos pulled the door open and ushered me inside. The small storage space had all kinds of boxes and crates off to one side, with a table and chair set on the other. We followed the path to an open doorway and came out inside a store. Three young men stood around the counter with an older guy behind it. They all wore wife-beater tank tops, exposing tattoos that ran the length of their arms, with piercings in their ears and eyebrows. As they became aware of us, the room went deathly still. The quiet tension sent a wave of unease over me, and as good as Ramos was, I didn't like the odds. The big guy, behind the counter, scared me the most. His dark eyebrows and bearded face gave his shaven head a sinister gleam. Black ear gauges broadened his earlobes, and tattoos covered his neck. His cold gaze zeroed in on me, sending a chill down my spine. For something to do, I tore my attention away from him and glanced at the merchandise, taking in the used furniture, vinyl records, and comic books. My eyes widened to find a green, rubber, Incredible Hulk, exactly like the one my brother used to play with. Searching further, I found other toys from my past, and I couldn't resist touching a squishy blue Smurf doll. Beside it, several troll dolls, a Little Pony stuffed toy, a Strawberry Shortcake doll, and about 20 Barbie dolls lined one whole shelf. Whoa, this stuff was right out of my childhood. All that was missing was the Cabbage Patch Kid. The big guy rounded the counter, and his face broke into a sudden grin. Ramos, welcome. He gave Ramos a complicated handshake and then introduced his men. Each of them fist-bumped Ramos, and I caught all kinds of respect from them. It was clear they all admired him, and I shook my head in astonishment and relief. Ramos turned my way and introduced me to them as Uncle Joey's niece. Usually that bothered me, but not today. It also surprised me that they used their real names with me instead of their gang names, and I appreciated that bit of normalcy. The big guy, Rod, noticed that I held one of the dolls in my hand and smiled, thinking that I was probably reliving my childhood. Normally I'd sell that toy for $50, but you can have it for 20. He raised his brows with expectation, hoping I was one of those sentimental types, and thinking if he could get 20 for it, he'd be a happy man. That's okay, I was just looking. I quickly set it down and smiled, catching his disappointment. He shrugged, then asked the guys to watch the store while he turned to the back where we'd come in. Ramos and I followed him to the storage room, and we all sat down at the table. "What can I do for you?" Rod asked, glancing between us with curiosity. When Minetto sent Ramos, it usually meant that someone on Rod's side had messed up, so it made him a little nervous. He studied me, thinking that I was probably involved, but he had no idea how. "We need some information," Ramos began. "A personal friend of Shelby's was murdered last night. It looks like someone from your gang might have been involved. Do you know anything about it?" Rod's eyes widened. "Who was it?" Ramos glanced my way, so I answered his question. Molly May?
Rod's lips flattened, and he sighed before speaking. It wasn't good to cross Minetto, and if anyone in his gang had done this, he'd take it personally. Still, he hadn't heard a peep from his boys, and had no idea who Molly May was.
Why do you think it was one of us?
She was Angel Molina's girlfriend, I said. You remember him, don't you?
Recognition flashed through Rod's eyes before he shuddered them.
He's not one of mine. Not anymore.
He was thinking that Angel had left the gang a couple of years ago. Angel had paid his dues, so there were no hard feelings. But taking their cue from Angel, several of the others had followed his example, depleting the gang's numbers. Rod had been willing to let it go, but now it looked like his silent partner was out for revenge. Since Minetto wasn't supposed to know about Rod's silent partner, who went by the name of Scorpion, it put Rod in a tough spot. He wasn't sure whose side it was better to be on, Minetto's or Scorpion's. But if Scorpion was going behind Rod's back, he should probably side with Minetto.
I thought that was a no-brainer, but what did I know?
Rod was thinking that maybe one of the guys out front would know what was going on. But he'd rather wait until we were gone before he confronted them. That way, he could get to the bottom of it without Minetto's involvement. Then, he'd take care of Scorpion, and everything would go back to the status quo.
We need to speak with your guys out front, I said. Could you bring them back here?
Rod's eyes widened. What the hell? He opened his mouth to say no, but something in Ramos's gaze stopped him cold. Swallowing his protest, he nodded, thinking that we knew more than he thought, and he'd better go along with whatever we wanted.
Sure.
After he left, Ramos leaned toward me.
What's going on?
Rod thinks his silent partner Scorpion was behind it.
Partner?
That was news to Ramos, and totally against Rod's agreement with Minetto.
Yeah, I know. Rod wondered if one of the boys knew anything about it, and he was going to question them after we left. But I thought we'd speed things up.
Ramos nodded his agreement, then stood as the young men came into the room. With hardened eyes, he motioned for them to sit down at the table and stood behind me with his arms crossed in a no-nonsense stance that made his muscles bulge. Rod stood behind the boys, following Ramos's lead, determined to show his support for Minetto by putting the best spin on this predicament as possible. All three of them picked up the vibe that something was wrong and they might be in trouble. Two of them shared a glance, each suspicious that the other might cave and spill the beans. Scorpion wouldn't hesitate to kill them both if that happened, so they needed to play along. It surprised me that they feared Scorpion more than Ramos, Rod, or Uncle Joey, but I caught that they viewed Rod more like a father figure who wasn't about to harm either of them. And they'd never met Uncle Joey, although Ramos was the one with the reputation. I motioned toward the two on my left.
It's these two. They're in league with Scorpion.
Shock rippled through them, but before they could jump up and run, Rod and Ramos held them down. It only took a moment before they quit struggling. Rod thanked his lucky stars he'd made the right decision where Minetto was concerned, thinking he had no idea Minetto knew about Scorpion. Genuine fear rushed over the two boys, and for the first time in their lives, they thought they might die. The third boy stayed seated beside me. A rush of anger that he'd been left out, along with relief that he'd been left out, played inside his head in a loop. All that craziness began to make me dizzy.
"That's enough," I said, using my authoritative mom voice.
After the guys quieted, I held their gazes, letting them see the disappointment in my eyes.
"You have let us down, and now it's time to man up."
They dropped their gazes in shame, knowing they'd been had. And nothing they could say in their defense would make a bit of difference.
"That's right," I said. "It's time to own up to your mistakes. Scorpion is going down. Now the only question that remains is if you are going down with him. What are your names?"
They both swore in their minds, using some pretty bad words along with a couple I'd never heard before.
"Casey and Tyrell," Rod answered for them.
"All right, Casey and Tyrell. To prove your loyalty, I need you to tell me everything you know about Scorpion."
Tyrell couldn't seem to spill his guts fast enough while Casey sat there and sulked. I had to tell Tyrell several times to slow down. But I got the gist of it. It seemed that after several members of the gang had left, with no reprisals from Rod, Scorpion began to offer almost double the profits Rod had been paying. Since Scorpion controlled the cash flow, the lure proved too much for the two of them. They kept up pretenses for Rod while turning their allegiance to Scorpion, knowing that once Scorpion had the power, Rod would be eliminated, and Scorpion would take over.
"What about Minetto?" Ramos asked.
"Scorpion's not afraid of him," Casey said.
"Does he have a name?" I asked.
"Not that I ever heard," Tyrell answered. "But he's not from around here. He lives in a nice neighborhood and everything."
"So you've been to his house?"
"No. We've only ever met with him in his car. But he's got a lot of money, so he has to live someplace nice."
Tyrell was thinking that Scorpion had promised to have them both over for a pool party with lots of women once he'd taken over.
I glanced at Rod with narrowed eyes.
"I know you've met with him, Rod. Who is he?"
Rod's lips thinned, and he cursed that he'd been duped. He pulled a wallet from his pocket and slipped a worn business card from the inside.
"Here's his card. If I wanted to meet with him, I'd call this number and we'd set it up. Different places and different times."
He handed it to me, but all it said was Scorpion, with a number under it. I glanced at Ramos and handed him the card.
"I guess it's up to you to take care of Scorpion and clean up after these guys."
I mostly said that to bolster Ramos's badass reputation in front of them, but I also had no doubt that he would do it.
"I look forward to it," he said, a gritty edge to his voice.
He turned to Rod and the rest of the group.
"You'll be held personally responsible, Rod, so make sure you keep an eye on these two. I can't guarantee anything, but there might be something all of you can do to right this wrong. Minetto usually likes to make arrangements, so I hope for your sake that he's in a giving mood."
He waited for me to walk out the door, then followed, shutting the door solidly behind him. Neither of us spoke while we slipped on our helmets. Soon, we roared down the side street and onto the road heading back to Thrasher Development. I held on tight, picking up a flicker of contentment from Ramos. He liked how closely my arms curled around him. He'd also been impressed with my command of the situation with the gang and how I'd whipped them all into shape. It was like second nature to me. Maybe I was related to Minetto after all. I chuckled. Uncle Joey did have an influence on me, but I was also a mother, and all mothers knew how to use disappointment and guilt on people everywhere. I was just glad it had worked. Before I wanted it to end, Ramos pulled into the parking garage. I got off the bike and handed him my helmet. He stored it in the trunk of his car and turned to face me.
"You coming up?"
I don't know. It's getting late and I need to go home and make dinner."
"What are you going to do about Scorpion?" He pulled the card from his pocket.
"I guess I'll call this number and set up a meeting."
He was thinking he'd use an alias and set it up under the pretense of making a deal.
"That should work. Do you want me to come with you?"
"No."
He shook his head, thinking that it could get ugly, and it wasn't something he wanted me to be a part of. But How am I going to prove that Scorpion killed Molly instead of Angel?
Leave it to me.
He was thinking that one way or another, he'd get Scorpion to confess or give him the name of the real killer.
After I'm done with him, he'll be grateful to talk to the police.
I didn't doubt Ramos for a minute. Okay. Well, if you need me, just give me a call. He said he would, and I hurried to my car.
Chapter 5. Before I left the parking garage, I debated if I should head back over to the precinct. I could tell Dimples all about Scorpion, but if Ramos was going to take care of it, that might not be the best thing to do. So, where did that leave me? The only thing I had left on my to-do list was visit the neighbor who'd called the police after hearing the gunshots. I remembered his name was Hunter Smith from the police report. Had he been sound asleep, or had the gunshots woken him up? Would knowing any of that help me find Scorpion? I had more trust in Ramos to find him than whatever the neighbor had to say. But it wouldn't hurt to talk to the guy, right? I checked my watch. It was nearly 6, and I'd been gone all day. Besides fixing dinner, I needed a diet soda, something fierce, and I was tired. The neighbor would have to wait until tomorrow. I pulled into my driveway and hurried inside the house. A quick bark, followed by the sounds of pattering paws, reminded me that there was a dog in my house. Before I could set my purse on the table, Pepper bounded toward me with her tongue lolling. I knelt down to greet her, and her whole body wagged with enthusiasm. She tried to lick my face, and I pulled away while patting her squirming body. "Hey, girl," I said, "what have you been doing?" She woofed, and I heard, "Play." Stunned, I lost my balance and fell on my butt. Her front paws came down on my stomach, and she licked my face with her big wet tongue. "Stop that!" I pushed her off me, but she kept coming back, standing on my chest and trying to lick my face, and I realized it was like a game to her.
"Hey, Ma," Josh said.
Then he thought he'd better lend me a hand, since I was letting the dog walk all over me. Didn't I know anything about dogs?
"Pepper, come, sit."
The command in his voice stopped Pepper in her tracks. After a quick glance at me, she hurried over to Josh's side and sat down. She looked up at him and woofed. This time I heard, "treat." Josh must have heard it too, because he pulled something out of his pocket and gave it to her. Then ruffled her fur and called her a good dog.
"Have you been working with her?" I asked, rising to my feet.
He shrugged.
"She's already trained, but yeah, she's a good dog."
He really thought she was awesome and wished we could keep her.
"Savannah told me you're helping her owner. Did he really get arrested for murder?"
I sighed and sat down at the table. "Yes, but he's innocent. Your dad's taking the case, so that's good. But I'm afraid that the only way to get him off is to find the real killer."
"That sucks."
"Yeah, but I've been working with the police, and I have a few leads to follow, so that's good. Pepper's a great dog, isn't she?"
"Yeah."
He let out a sigh, thinking that having her made him want a dog.
"So, will she be staying with us for a while?"
"Yes." I caught his joy at having her around a little longer and smiled. "I've got to fix dinner, but tell me how your day went." While he told me about his day, I got the rest of the ingredients out for my famous summer pasta salad. It was one of our favorites, and I'd already cooked the pasta and let it marinate all day in the special sauce. Now, all I had to do was add the chicken, craisins, peanuts, spinach, and mandarin oranges. By the time I'd finished, Chris had come home, and we were ready to eat. Before dinner, Josh fed Pepper, and she settled down under the table while we ate our salad and rolls. I picked up that it didn't even cross her mind to beg for our food, which made me extra happy.
Pepper, also warmed up pretty fast to Chris. As she sniffed him, Chris was thinking that having a dog was kind of fun, especially one as well-trained as she seemed to be. After a quiet evening, I realized that we needed to figure out where Pepper was going to sleep. Did she have her own bed at home? I should have asked Angel. I guess we should get her a blanket to sleep on. She perked up at the word sleep, so I asked her where she wanted to sleep. She wagged her tail and licked at my fingers, letting out a little woof. You? What? No, I answered. She whined pitifully, and it tore at my heartstrings. We'll get you a nice soft blanket, all right? She woofed you again, then held my gaze expectantly. I could hardly believe we were having a conversation. Before I could answer, Josh chimed in.
She can sleep in my room. Huh, girl? Does that sound good?
He patted her on the head, and Pepper hurried to his side. Licking his hand, she let out a snuffle that I knew meant yes. Well, I'm glad that's settled, I said. I'll get the blanket. Once Pepper was settled and the kids had gone to bed, I told Chris everything I'd found out, including my little foray into gang territory. He didn't like that I'd done that. But since I'd also discovered that Scorpion was the person most likely responsible for Molly's death, he couldn't exactly complain.
You and Ramos, huh?
Yeah, so I was perfectly safe. I decided to emphasize that part instead of the part about being with Ramos. He's going to follow up on the phone number and find the guy. Maybe by tomorrow, we'll have the real killer in custody, and Angel will be free. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
He didn't like me spending too much time with Ramos. Then he hoped Ramos knew he shouldn't kill the guy. That would ruin everything. What would we do then? He's not going to kill him, I said. He knows we need Scorpion alive. Anyway, how are things going with Ethan? Did you leave him on the case?
Yes. I'm planning to go over the files that he brought back from Strickland's office tomorrow morning with him. Oddly, he said there wasn't much in the files that would help our case, and he wanted me to push for a plea bargain.
That sounds like he's following Strickland's orders, just like he wanted him to.
I know, but don't be too hard on Ethan. I want to see the report. On paper, it might look like the best option for Angel, so until I see it, I'm not going to think the worst of Ethan.
I thought that was pretty generous of him. Fine, but just remember that Ethan isn't on your side, and don't overlook the possibility that he'll hide something from you to achieve his purposes.
I won't.
He didn't like thinking that Ethan was a bad guy, and he wished I was more understanding. Would it help if I stopped by tomorrow, just to make sure? His lips turned down. He didn't like me thinking that he couldn't do his job without my help. I never said that. But you have to admit that my mind-reading skills could certainly come in handy right now.
Yes, that's true. But why don't I call you if I need you?
Okay, fine. I want to talk to Molly's neighbor, so I'll do that first. If I find out anything you need to know, I'll stop by the office.
Sounds good, he said, thinking that was a good compromise.
I couldn't argue with that, so I changed the subject. Hey, what do you think about the dog? Our kids sure like her.
Yeah,
his gaze caught mine, and his brows drew together.
It almost looked like you understood her. Could you read her mind?
I snorted. Well, not at first. I mostly picked up emotions, but when I got home and she barked, I heard a couple of one-syllable words. Isn't that nuts?
Like what?
He asked. Play and you. She understood sleep, too, and she wanted to sleep with me, but after Josh offered, she was happy to be with him. She's a real sweetie.
So you heard actual words?
Yeah. When I got home, she jumped on me and barked, play. Crazy, huh?
No kidding.
He wondered if I could understand all animals and thought how cool that might be. Maybe I could become the next dog whisperer or animal psychologist and make lots of money on videos about how to understand your dog. I could have my own TV show. He thought those guys probably raked in a lot of money. Maybe I could even write a book about it and become a best-selling author. Chris, stop. I have enough on my plate.
All right. He jerked his thoughts back to me, realizing that he'd gone a little overboard with the speaking to animals part.
That's okay. I still love you anyway.
He chuckled and pulled me into his arms. That's good, because I'm not going away, even if it's hard to live with someone who's already reading my mind.
My mouth dropped open. Are you complaining?
He shrugged. I guess so. But at least I said that out loud, right? Normally you'd just hear it in my mind.
That's true.
Yeah. And then you'd feel bad. And we might end up having an argument. At least I'm learning that I might as well just say those kinds of things, since you'd hear it anyway.
Then he smiled.
But there are still some things I don't need to say out loud.
His lips caught mine in a sweet kiss. Then he trailed kisses down my jaw and neck to that ticklish spot behind my ear. I picked up how much he loved me and how he planned to follow through on those thoughts. My heart quickened with desire.
Oh, baby, oh, baby.
I called Dimples the next morning. I hadn't heard from Ramos yet, so I wasn't sure if he'd contacted Scorpion or not. Until then, I might as well talk to the neighbor, and Dimples could help me with that.
Hello? He answered.
Hey there, it's Shelby. Have you heard anything new about Angel's case?
No, but that's because the case is closed. With Angel's arrest, no one's investigating further. What about you?
No, not really. That wasn't exactly a lie, right? But I thought maybe we could talk to the neighbor. Maybe he saw more than he said, and I can pick it up from his mind. What do you say?
Sure. I'll have to look up his contact information first. He's probably at work. Hang on.
I waited while he brought up the file on his computer.
Okay, I've got it. His name is Hunter Smith, and I have his phone number right here. Let me set it up and I'll call you back.
Sounds good. It didn't take long for Dimples to return my call.
Okay, he began. We can see him in an hour at his office. Apparently he runs a bunch of payday loan offices in the city. But his headquarters aren't too far from your place. Do you want to meet me there?
Sure.
He gave me the address and added, and when we're done, you can tell me what more you found out about the gang and if it's tied to the case.
The gang?
I tried to deny it, but I'd protested too much to sound like I was telling the truth. Yes?
Okay. Fine, I'll tell you what I know. Just don't ask me how I know it.
Shelby.
Bye.
Luckily, it wasn't too hard to find the building where Hunter Smith worked.
I got there a little early, but decided to wait in the parking lot until Dimples arrived. After he pulled up, I slipped my honorary police ID badge over my head and followed him inside. His office was located on the second floor of the three-story building. The sign on the door said, Fast Money, Payday Loans. Dimples pushed the door open, and we entered a small office. Several chairs lined one side of the wall, with a reception desk at the end of the room. A young woman sat at the desk, filing her nails. She glanced up as we came inside and sent us a smile.
Welcome to Fast Money. How can I help you?
I'm Detective Harris, and this is Shelby Nichols. We're here to see Hunter Smith.
Oh, right, just a moment.
She moved to the only other door in the office and knocked, then pushed it open and poked her head inside.
Hunter, the police are here.
I heard a low voice telling her to send us in. She nodded, then pulled the door wide for us.
He'll see you now.
She was thinking that it made her just a little nervous to have the police there, even though the business was legitimate. Still, after working for a payday loan company, she felt a little dirty, mostly because the interest rates on these loans seemed criminal. And it seemed that the poor people who got sucked into them could never get out again. We entered the office to find a clean-shaven 40-something man with short, dark hair and brown eyes. He wore square-shaped glasses and was average height, around 5'8 or 9. He seemed a little on the hefty side, but I couldn't tell if it was muscle or fat. He smiled and stood, offering us both a hand to shake. But he was thinking that he didn't have a lot of time to talk, and he hoped we'd be brief.
Please, sit down. I gave my statement to the police on the night of the murder. Is there something I missed?
No, Dimples answered.
We just wanted to find out if you remembered anything else from that night that would help us.
Hunter's brows drew together.
I thought you had the guy who killed her in custody.
He'd read about it just this morning in the paper. Angel Molina was the main suspect. So why were we there?
We just want to make sure we have the right guy, I said. Can you tell us what you witnessed that night?
I heard them arguing outside on their back patio late that evening. It's not far from my bedroom window, and with it open, it was easy to hear their raised voices.
What were they arguing about? I asked.
Hunter shrugged. From what I could tell, it was about money. And maybe something she did at work. But I couldn't hear all of it.
He was thinking that he'd heard enough to know it was big, especially after she asked Angel to leave. How long have you lived there?
I just moved in a couple of months ago, he answered, wondering what that had to do with it.
Did you know them well? I asked. Hunter was thinking that he'd only spoken to Molly a few times, mostly over the fence. But Angel was a different story. He'd never met the guy, but he'd heard plenty about him.
I talked to them a few times over the fence, but just to say hello and stuff like that. I never spent any time with them, so the answer is no.
Did you know them before you moved in?
Hadn't he just answered that question? What was I trying to get him to say?
No, I never met them before.
He hadn't met them, but he certainly knew who they were. It was the whole reason he'd moved in next door.
What did he mean by that?
So you did know them, I asked, hoping to clarify his thoughts with his words.
I never said that.
Hunter's eyes narrowed. What was going on with me?
Right, I'm sorry. I was just a little confused. Let's move on. What time did you hear the gunshots and call the police?
It was just after 2 a.m. I know because the first shot woke me up, and I glanced at the clock. Right after that, I heard the second shot. Like I said, my bedroom window faces their kitchen, and my window was open. I called the police right away.
Did you see or hear anything after that? Dimples asked, thinking that if his window was so close, he could have seen the killer leaving in his car.
No, the kitchen blinds were shut. There may have been a light, but I don't remember.
What about Angel's car? Did you see it leave? I asked, continuing Dimples's train of thought.
He shrugged. The garage is on the other side of the house, so I didn't see him leave. Any other sounds, like a car driving away?
Dimples had read over the copy of the police report with Hunter's statement, and everything he told us matched. But something didn't make sense. Why hadn't he heard more? There couldn't have been that many cars driving down the street so early in the morning.
I don't remember, Hunter said. The shots spooked me, and I panicked. I didn't know if I'd heard right, and I was trying to decide what to do. After I called the police, I waited on my front porch until they got there. After that, one of them came over to talk to me. That's when I heard that Molly was dead.
That must have been a shock, I said. He nodded, but the vision in his brain was of Molly lying in a pool of blood on the kitchen floor. Did he just imagine that, or did he really go inside and take a look? Then I caught that he thought the smell was the worst part, and my breath hitched. Did that mean he was the killer?
Yeah, he answered. I never would have thought someone could be murdered right next door to me.
He glanced up, taking in my pale face and widened eyes. He thought I looked at him with distaste, or was it horror? Now why would I do that?
Anyway, he continued, I have an appointment I need to get to, so I'm out of time. If you have more questions, you have my number.
He stood, signaling that he was done with us. He was thinking that he only had 15 minutes before his scheduled meeting with the mysterious caller. He wondered who the new distributor was and why Rod had given the guy his number. Rod had never done that before, and it made him suspicious. Since he couldn't trust Rod, it might be time to take him out. He'd served his purpose. The boys should follow his lead now, especially if Rod were to die. Controlled rage filled his chest. He'd lost a fair amount of the gang thanks to Angel. It had set him back for months, maybe even years. But now, with Angel in jail and Molly dead, at least that shouldn't happen anymore. I swallowed, and my stomach clenched. It was him. He was the killer, and it sounded like he was meeting with Ramos. That meant he was also Scorpion. I wasn't sure what to do. Since we had no proof, I couldn't have Dimples arrest him. But I should probably warn Ramos that Scorpion had killed Molly and planned to kill Rod. Dimples glanced at me with concern. What was going on? Why hadn't I said anything? Was I done? What was wrong? I took a deep breath and stood, urging Dimples to his feet. I pasted a fake smile on my face, knowing we were far from done, but there was nothing I could do about it now. Thanks for your time. We'll be in touch. He reached out to shake my hand. I didn't want to touch him, but I couldn't exactly refuse. I gave his hand a quick shake. Even more quickly, I pulled my hand away. I hoped he hadn't noticed my revulsion, and I barely managed to keep from wiping my hand on my pants. After Dimples shook his hand, we hurried out the door. As we rode the elevator to the first floor, I let out a huge sigh of relief to be away from such a cold-blooded killer. Dimples wisely waited until we were out of the building before confronting me.
What was that all about?
I tugged on his arm to lead him away from the building. He's the killer.
What?
Yeah, it's him. I glanced around to make sure no one could overhear us and continued walking until we stood beneath a tree at the corner of the building. The morning sun made it too hot to sit in our cars, and I needed to tell him everything quickly so I could call Ramos and warn him. Before I could begin, Dimples' cell phone rang. After checking the caller ID, he said,
"Sorry, but I've got to take this."
He stepped away to talk, and I let out a sigh. Deciding there was no time to lose, I put my call through to Ramos.
"Babe, what's up?"
he asked. "I know who Scorpion is," I blurted. "His name is Hunter Smith, and he killed Molly May."
"How do you know that?"
"I just met with him. He's the neighbor who called the police. He masterminded the whole thing. I think he's got some revenge issues with Angel and the gang. He also runs a payday loan outfit called Fast Money. I picked up that he's meeting with you in a few minutes, so I wanted to make sure you knew. He's planning to kill Rod at some point. So be careful, all right?"
Sure.
"And try not to kill him. I need him alive to take the rap for Molly's murder."
He chuckled. "Okay, I'll try, but I think you and I need to talk. After I meet with him, I'll call you."
"Sounds good." We disconnected, and I glanced up to find Dimples standing behind me with no phone in sight. Surprised, I jerked with guilt. "Did you hear all that?" His eyes narrowed, and he dipped his head, so I hurried to explain. That was my informant with the gang. Since Dimples wouldn't approve, I wasn't about to tell him it was Ramos. His mouth drew into a frown. Why was I trying to fool him? He knew my informant was Ramos, so I might as well just say it.
Oh, you do? Well, I guess I should have said so, but it's hard when I know you don't like him.
He let out a big sigh. Shelby, he's a hitman for a mob boss. Of course I don't like him.
See, I said, that's my point.
That's not what I meant. I'd rather know what you're up to, even if it's with him, than to be left in the dark, so tell me everything.
I don't know if that's wise. I mean, you're a cop. I don't want to get you in trouble. How about I tell you the parts that pertain to the murder investigation, and we go from there?
He raked a hand through his hair, thinking that I drove him nuts. Sure, fine, go ahead.
I explained everything I'd heard in Hunter's mind, including the part that he went by Scorpion and was linked to the West 53 gang.
So, Dimples began, this guy, Hunter, or we should say Scorpion, killed Molly and framed Angel, all because he didn't like that Angel had left the gang?
I think so, and since Molly had helped several gang members start new lives away from the gang, she was a perfect target. He even moved in next door to Molly just a few months ago, so it was definitely part of his plan.
But how come Angel didn't recognize him?
Because the gang only knew Hunter as Scorpion, and he only met with the gang leader and not the guys? Well, until recently, he partnered with the leader.
You mean Rod? Dimples asked, remembering my conversation with Ramos.
Yeah, anyway, he partnered with Rod, but now he's planning to kill Rod and take over.
Dimples scratched his forehead. He wondered how Minetto fit in with all of this. Did Minetto have anything to do with the gangs in the city? Did he know about Scorpion and his plans to take over the drug business? Is that why Ramos was involved? He glanced my way, hoping I'd answer, but not sure I would. Was I too wrapped up in Minetto's organization to tell him, even if it was the right thing to do? Whoa, talk about pressure.
I don't know the answer to any of that. As far as I know, Uncle Joey isn't involved, but I'm sure he still likes to know what's going on in the city.
Sure, okay. So what do we do now? How do we prove that Scorpion killed Molly May? Did you get anything from him about how he did it?
Not really. We didn't talk to him long enough, but maybe if you bring him in for questioning, I'll pick something up.
Like what? Sure, we have motive, but other than that, there's no evidence. Angel's gun was wiped clean. There's nothing to tie him to the scene. He even called the police. Short of a confession, we've got nothing.
I thought back to his images of Molly. Well, if he killed her, maybe he got her blood on his clothes? I didn't see the police report, but you could check if the bullet wound would have left a blood splatter on him somewhere, right?
Yeah. Dimples nodded, liking the possibility. I think she was shot at close range, so that might be something we could check into. I could get a warrant, and we could go through every square inch of his house and property. This could work, but we need to do it fast, before he's had a chance to get rid of it. I'll head back to the station and talk to the forensics team, then I'll get a search warrant.
Okay, I agreed. Do you want me to come?
I'll call you when I get the warrant. If it's within the next hour or two, Scorpion should still be working, and I can meet you at his house.
Sounds good. While Dimples hurried to his car, I glanced toward the building and caught sight of a black sedan pulling up in front of the entrance. The driver got out of the car and walked toward the entrance with the keys.
A moment later, Scorpion came out carrying a briefcase. He took the keys from the driver and got behind the wheel. Since I had time to kill, maybe I should follow Scorpion and see where he went. Maybe I could learn more about him and his organization that would turn up evidence of Molly's murder. I knew he was meeting with Ramos, and I didn't think Ramos would mind if I was close by, as long as I kept my distance. I turned to make a mad dash for my car and knocked into a person coming up behind me. My purse went flying, and my keys fell to the ground. Ready to apologize, I glanced up to find the kid I knew as Casey, from the gang, staring down at me. Before I could utter a sound, he clamped his hand over my mouth and twisted my arm behind my back. The car Scorpion was driving pulled to a quick stop in front of us. Casey opened the back door and shoved me inside the car. From the front seat, Scorpion pointed a gun at me. "Keep quiet, or I'll use this." Fear rippled down my spine. It had a silencer on it, and he was dead serious. After retrieving both my purse and my keys, Casey jumped inside the car. As the door closed behind him, Scorpion stepped on the gas. I glanced out the back window, hoping that Dimples might have seen it all, but there was no sign of him anywhere. "Why are you doing this?" "Cuff her," Scorpion told Casey. With more enthusiasm than I liked, Casey pulled my hands behind my back and snapped a pair of handcuffs around my wrists. I glanced at him with the most guilt-inducing look I could muster. As he called me some really bad names in his mind, I realized that it hadn't even fazed him. "Your mother would be so ashamed," I said. That did the trick, and his tough guy facade dropped for an instant before his jaw jutted out with contempt. I picked up his desire to hurt me, and my heart picked up speed. Lucky for me, he held back, thinking that I deserved whatever Scorpion did to me, and he hoped it wasn't pretty. "I suggest you be careful about what you say," Scorpion said, "if you value your life."
"I don't understand," I began. "Why are you doing this to me?"
He shook his head. "It will all come together soon enough." He was thinking that Casey had seen me leaving his office and had told him I'd been with Ramos at Rod's store the day before. When he added that I was Uncle Joey's niece, it had all clicked. He realized that Ramos was the mysterious distributor he was meeting with in just a few minutes, and could hardly believe his luck. He'd immediately sent Casey to follow me and was pleasantly surprised that I was still there, providing him with the perfect opportunity to grab me before his meeting with Ramos. Now, he had to play his cards right. He still didn't understand my link with the police, but if I was Minetto's niece, he could use me as a bargaining chip. With me in his clutches, he was pretty sure the odds for taking over a large portion of Minetto's territory were in the bag. Sure, Minetto was a big deal, but his influence had spread further than Minetto knew, giving him the upper hand with two of the biggest gangs in the city. Not even Ramos could stop him now. I swallowed, and my stomach clenched with foreboding. This was bad. Then my rational mind kicked in, and I realized that as much as Scorpion might think he had the upper hand, he didn't know Uncle Joey or Ramos at all. And he didn't know about me and my mind-reading skills. Then the other side of that equation helped settle me down. Dimples knew Scorpion had killed Molly and was, at this moment, getting a search warrant. Between Uncle Joey, Ramos, and Dimples, I knew one way or another Scorpion was going down. I just had to make sure I lived long enough to see it happen.
Chapter 6. We arrived at our destination behind a Fast Money payday loan building.
This one was located in a rundown neighborhood next to an old restaurant. Instead of entering the lone building, we followed Scorpion toward the back of the restaurant and up the outside staircase to the second floor. At the top of the stairs, Scorpion unlocked the door and ushered us inside to a large office space with a desk and filing cabinets on one side and a couch and coffee table on the other. Scorpion headed through a doorway that led to a small apartment, thinking that he needed to gear up before he met with Ramos. Casey propelled me toward the couch, and I sank into the soft cushion, but couldn't get comfortable with my hands cuffed behind my back. While waiting for Scorpion, I figured now was a good time to get Casey talking, or rather, thinking. Do you really think Scorpion can take on Uncle Joey?
What?
Casey's brows rose with alarm. He had no idea that was the plan. Then he realized he'd given himself away and carefully schooled his features to a semblance of nonchalance. Well, it's your funeral, but I wouldn't want to be in your shoes when Ramos gets here. Scorpion may think he's got it together, but he's got nothing on a hitman like Ramos. Do you know how many people Ramos has killed? He wouldn't think twice about putting an end to your sorry, double-crossing, two-timing life. Casey swallowed. He'd only met Ramos for the first time yesterday, and he didn't know much about Minetto. But he'd heard rumors that no one had ever crossed them, and lived to tell about it. But maybe that's all they were, rumors to keep people in line. He hadn't heard of anyone showing up dead lately. You might think those are just rumors, I said, hoping to get under his skin. But believe me, Uncle Joey can't abide anyone who grovels, runs, or double-crosses him. Casey's eyes widened, then he thought about Cato, one of the gang members who'd disappeared recently. He'd thought the guy had just gotten tired of taking orders and left. But what if he was dead? I didn't know anything about that, but I figured I might as well use it. In fact, you remember Cato, don't you? He said something he shouldn't have, and now, well, let's just say he's pushing up daisies in an old mine shaft somewhere. That rattled Casey, and his breath hitched. Maybe he had chosen the wrong side after all. His gaze went to the door, and he thought about leaving. But before he could move, Scorpion came back into the room. He was dressed in jeans and black biker boots, with a hoodie to conceal the gun strapped to his waist. I picked up that he wore a Kevlar vest under the hoodie for extra protection, and had concealed more than one knife in his pockets. He was thinking he was 20 minutes late rather than his usual half an hour, but he'd already gotten a text from Rex telling him that Ramos was there, and he didn't feel like waiting any longer. He glanced my way, wishing there was a better way to ensure my cooperation. But since he didn't know how much trouble I'd be, the storage room would have to suffice. He took out his phone and snapped a couple of pictures of me, knowing he'd need proof that he had me in his clutches.
"Let's take her to the basement," he told Casey, "and I'll need you to wait with her until I come back."
Casey nodded and grabbed my arm, pulling me to my feet. Scorpion led the way back down the outside stairwell. At the back of the building, he pulled open a double door and flipped a light switch. The light revealed steps that led downward into a dark storage space. I didn't want to go down there much, but I knew Casey was having second thoughts, so there was still a chance I could talk him into letting me go. After Casey and I started down the stairwell, Scorpion shut the doors and locked us in. Casey jerked with alarm, and his breath hitched. He took one look at my knowing expression and shook his head before continuing down the stairs. At the bottom, he flipped another switch, lighting up the large storage space. A chill ran down my spine, and my stomach clenched. The last time I'd been in a basement storage area, I'd gotten shot. And fear gripped my heart. I have a bad feeling about this. I knew I was quoting a movie, but since it totally applied, I couldn't help it. Piles of discarded tables and chairs littered the space. A few broken-down arcade machines rested against one wall, clouded by dust and rubbish. Another corner held cardboard boxes and a filing cabinet. Our feet left footprints in the dust, and I knew no one had been down there in a long time. The lone light bulb hanging in the center of the room made a buzzing sound and flickered. I held my breath, waiting for it to go out, but nothing happened. I glanced at Casey. "How about you unlock my handcuffs and we try and get out of here?" His Adam's apple moved up and down as he swallowed. He was thinking that he could probably get out of there just fine on his own, and unlocking my cuffs was a last resort. He turned around and fled back up the stairs. He tried the door handle, even though it was locked up tight. Next, he heaved his shoulder against the doors a few times, but all that got him were a few bruises. I let out an exasperated breath. He was wasting precious time. "I know how to pick a lock." That caught his attention. With reluctance, he came back down beside me. Taking the key from his pocket, he unlocked the cuffs. I pulled them from my wrists and dropped them on the floor. Letting out a relieved breath, I gratefully brought my hands together and rubbed my sore wrists. I turned to tell him thanks, but froze to find that he held a gun pointed at me. "What? Are you nuts? Just shut up and get that door opened. I need my lock-picking tools, and they're in my purse. But maybe we can find something that will work in one of these boxes." I hurried to a box before he could stop me and pulled it open, looking for anything that I could use as a weapon. Finding mostly dirty dishes, I kept looking until coming across a box of pots and frying pans. I grabbed the biggest frying pan I could see and pulled it out. I could barely lift it with one hand and realized it was made of cast iron. Before I could reach for a different pan, voices sounded from outside. A key rattled in the door, then it swung open, letting in a shaft of light. Startled, Casey froze, glancing at me with big eyes. Then he seemed to realize that he had nothing to fear, and I was the one making him nervous. I hid the pan behind my back and moved to stand beside him. "Scorpion doesn't know you have a gun, so you should put it away." With a jerk, he quickly slid it into the back of his pants and tried to compose his features. It shocked him that I knew that little detail. How was that possible? He brought the gun to protect himself if something went wrong, but how did I know that? "After you," Scorpion said, and I watched as black biker boots, then legs covered in dark jeans, and finally Ramos's handsome face came into view. Scorpion held a gun at his back and followed him down the steps just out of reach. "See? She's fine." Ramos held my gaze, asking if I was all right in his mind. I gave him a quick nod, and his lips thinned. He was thinking that he couldn't believe that Scorpion had captured me. "How did I get into so much trouble without even trying?" Scorpion moved to the opposite wall, where Ramos couldn't reach him, knowing he had to be careful around the hitman. "Here's the deal," he began. "It's simple. Once Minetto and I come to an agreement, I'll let her go. She could leave with you right now, and no one would need to get hurt." "What's the catch?" Ramos asked. Scorpion sighed, shaking his head like he was explaining to a 6-year-old. "Like I said upstairs, in exchange for Shelby, you and Minetto agree to leave me and my operation alone. You no longer need to concern yourselves with the West 53s or the Southside gangs.
And if we don't?
Well, then, things would go bad fast.
People,
he glanced my way,
like Shelby and her family,
would start dying. You wouldn't want that, especially when there's plenty to go around for both of us. You stay out of my way, and I stay out of yours. It's a mutually beneficial arrangement.
It sounded good, only he was thinking that he wanted it all. He was playing the long game.
Once he got a toehold, he planned on increasing his influence until he had it all. Minetto wouldn't last forever, and when the time was right, he'd take over everything Minetto had built. This was the perfect beginning.
Ramos glanced at me, telling me in his mind to be ready because he wasn't about to agree to anything. He wanted me to create a small distraction, nothing big, just something to take Scorpion's attention from him. I gave him a slight nod and turned to Casey.
Casey, I think it's time to pick a side.
Casey couldn't help looking between Ramos and Scorpion. They both scared him, but of the two, Ramos was the scariest. Still, Scorpion held a gun, and he couldn't fight a bullet. Scorpion's brows drew together, and he shifted his attention to Casey, wondering what I was talking about. While Scorpion focused on Casey, I made my move, shifting the heavy iron pan into my right hand and swinging it for all I was worth. I'd planned on hitting the back of Casey's head, but the pan was so heavy that I ended up whacking his butt instead. A loud boom, followed by the yellow flash of a bullet, exploded from Casey's gun. The bullet ripped through his pants, hit the cement, and ricocheted in my direction, hitting the pan I still held in my hands. Luckily, the cast iron deflected the bullet, causing the pan to fly out of my grip. Casey let out a scream and started jumping up and down like his pants were on fire. From the smoke coming out of them, it was probably true. My eyes widened with shock, and I glanced at Ramos, but he hadn't made his move yet. Instead, he stared at me with his mouth open. Then all at once, he jolted into action and pounced on Scorpion like a bat out of hell. Scorpion's gun flew from his hand, and Ramos attacked with lethal force. Scorpion had a few moves of his own and managed to defend himself, landing a few punches on Ramos, and their fight turned deadly. Casey stopped jumping long enough to take the gun out of his pants. I noticed a red stain spreading down his pant leg and knew the bullet must have grazed him. Tears ran down his face, and he moaned in pain. Holding his butt, he raised the gun and pointed it at me. His hand shook, and I didn't think he could see that well with all the tears, but I knew from his mind that he was still going to pull the trigger. I quickly dove to the side. The bullet struck the wall behind me, and I fell into a stack of boxes, causing them to tumble onto the floor around me. One of them missed my head, but two others hit my shoulders and thigh. As the dust cleared, I pushed them off me and cringed to hear another gunshot. This one came from the other side of the room where Ramos and Scorpion fought. I couldn't see Casey anywhere, but Ramos held a smoking gun in his hand. Scorpion took a few steps back, and then he fell to the floor, lying motionless on the ground.
Shelby, Ramos said, coming to my side. Are you all right?
Yeah, I think so. Where's Casey?
He ran up the stairs.
Ramos quickly shifted the boxes away and helped me stand. He looked me over, satisfied that I wasn't hurt.
What about you? I asked him. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
He glanced toward Scorpion.
But I'm sorry about Scorpion.
Oh, don't worry about him. He's not dead.
Ramos's brows rose with surprise.
How do you know that?
He's wearing a Kevlar vest. You shot him in the chest, right? So it's all good.
Ramos wasn't sure he liked that part. and he strode to Scorpion's side to see if I was right. Since I didn't want Ramos to shoot him again, I hurried after him. Dimples is getting evidence on him for Molly's murder, so I need him alive. While Ramos checked Scorpion for a pulse, I searched his vest for the bullet. Before I could find it, Scorpion heaved in a huge breath and let out a moan. His eyes fluttered open and then widened in fear to find Ramos standing over him. He tried to get up, but Ramos held him down with his booted foot right over the place where the bullet had hit him. Scorpion let out a strangled cry of pain. "I'll get the cuffs," I said, jumping to my feet. I found them on the floor where I'd left them. After securing them around Scorpion's wrists, Ramos took his foot away and stepped back.
I think we should call Dimples, but my phone is in Scorpion's car with my purse.
Ramos wasn't sure that was a good idea.
How are you going to explain this to the detective?
I'm not sure. What do you think I should do? He was thinking, leave me and Minetto out of it. I understood that, but how was I going to explain it without mentioning them?
Let me work something out with you,
Scorpion interrupted, his voice sounding desperate.
The police don't need to get involved.
Not a chance, Ramos said, sending Scorpion a cold, hard glare, and wishing he could just shoot him and be done with it. He glanced at me, knowing I'd heard that, and shrugged.
Short of killing him, I'm out of ideas.
That's okay. Trust me, we can work with Dimples. He'll be reasonable, and I'm sure we can come to an arrangement that will benefit all of us.
Ramos let out a breath. He didn't like dealing with cops, but if I vouched for Dimples, he'd go along with it for my sake.
Fine. He searched through Scorpion's pockets and pulled out his car keys. Then he handed me the gun.
Shoot him in the leg if he moves.
Sure thing, I agreed, mostly for Scorpion's benefit. I wasn't sure I could go through with it for real, but if he threatened me, I probably could.
Scorpion eyed me, wondering if I'd really shoot a defenseless man.
I didn't look the type, and this might be his only chance to escape.
Don't even think about it, I said. I will shoot you. And even if I were to miss, Ramos is right outside. He's just looking for an excuse to kill you. Do you really want to take that chance?
Scorpion's eyes got big, and he shook his head.
Good.
It kind of surprised me how easy it was to play the bad guy. Maybe I'd been around Uncle Joey and Ramos too much. A minute later, Ramos returned with my purse.
Thanks.
I handed him the gun and took the cell phone outside the doors for a little privacy. Taking a deep breath, I pushed Dimples' number and waited for him to pick up.
Hey, Shelby, he answered. I tried to call you, but you didn't answer. I got a warrant and I'm at his house. You'll never believe it, but I found a bloody shirt. I'm taking it to the lab. If it's a match, we've got him.
That's great.
Yeah, so where are you? Why didn't you answer your phone?
It's kind of a long story, but I've got Scorpion here with me. He's cuffed at the moment, but I could use some help.
What are you talking about?
Well, he kidnapped me outside the office after you left. But everything's good now. I just need you to come get me and arrest him.
Holy hell, are you serious?
He didn't wait for me to answer.
Damn it, just give me the address.
I gave him the address of the Fast Money payday loan business and told him I was behind the restaurant next door.
Scorpion's in the basement, and Ramos is here. I told him we'd figure this all out together, so just come by yourself, okay?
He hesitated before answering, and I could just imagine him shaking his head.
I'm on my way.
I disconnected and glanced around the area for any sign of Casey, but it looked like he was long gone. I hurried back down the stairs.
He's on his way, and he knows you're here.
I think we should tell him the whole story, and then we can figure out how much he should leave out of his report.
Ramos shook his head, not liking what I'd suggested.
How about this? Let's tell him Scorpion kidnapped you because Casey recognized you from our little meeting yesterday, just like it happened. We can say that he brought you here because I was meeting with him, and he was hoping I'd be on his side because he thought you were a snitch for the police.
Okay. That's actually a good idea.
Since I'm an upstanding citizen who was just trying to help you solve this murder, he continued, his plan backfired and we caught him. There's no need to mention Minetto.
I smiled. That should work perfectly.
Good.
Ramos let out a breath, relieved to have that settled. Then he thought how lucky I was to still be alive. After the kid's gun went off, it was a close thing. If the bullet hadn't ricocheted off the pan I was holding, it might have hit me.
Did you know the kid had a gun in his waistband?
Oh, yeah, but I didn't mean to hit him there. I was aiming for his head. But that frying pan is heavy. You should try and pick it up. He chuckled.
I believe you. But next time I ask for a distraction, try not to make it so...
distracting? I offered, smiling.
Yeah.
He sent me a sexy grin, and my heart flooded with warmth. He was glad that it had all worked out, and that I was all right. But there were times that I drove him crazy. In fact, how had I managed to let Casey and Scorpion get a hold of me anyway? He didn't think anyone could sneak up on me with my mind-reading skills. They can if I'm distracted, I said, wanting to defend myself.
It's okay, Shelby, he said, not wanting to hurt my feelings.
It had all worked out in the end, and catching Scorpion had saved both of us a lot of trouble. Now, Scorpion wasn't a threat to Minetto, and I'd caught the man who'd killed Molly. That's true, I agreed, sending him a smile, grateful to have him on my side. Whatever side that happened to be. A car pulled up outside, and Dimples hurried down the stairs. He took in the scene and wondered how I did it. I quickly explained the story Ramos and I had come up with, and Dimples accepted it, even though he knew we probably hadn't told him everything. Next, Dimples took Scorpion into custody. He wanted me to come to the station with him, but since I needed to get my car first, Ramos offered to take me on his motorcycle. Since it was an offer I couldn't resist, I agreed, happy to have an excuse to do something I enjoyed after all the excitement. He dropped me off at my car, and I arrived at the station after Scorpion had been booked. Dimples took my statement, hoping no one questioned its validity. But since he also had a bloody shirt as evidence, he thought it wouldn't be a problem.
I asked the lab to speed things up so we could charge Scorpion with Molly's murder, he said.
Good. How long do you think it will take before Angel is released from jail?
Not too long. Once we know the blood is Molly's, he should be released, hopefully by tomorrow.
Yay. That's great. Can I tell him?
Sure. He's still here in a holding cell, so go ahead.
Thanks. I couldn't wait to tell him the good news, and hurried to the holding cells. I had to wait several minutes before they took me to Angel's cell, and he stood with surprise to see me.
We got him, I said, the guy who killed Molly. You should be out of here soon.
Who did it?
Now came the hard part, and I explained how it was someone with a connection to the gang he once belonged to. He hung his head in shame.
This is my fault, he said. Molly was killed because of me.
I know it seems that way, but you can't take the blame. Scorpion did this, not you. He's an awful person. Molly loved helping people, whether you were involved or not. And she wouldn't want you to blame yourself. The guilt still hung heavy around him, but he pushed it aside and caught my gaze.
So,
They're really dropping the charges against me?
Yeah. As soon as they get the lab results, the detective said you should be cleared. But it might not be until tomorrow.
Thanks, Shelby. I don't know how to repay you.
That's not necessary. I'm just glad I could help.
So how's Pepper doing?
She's great. My kids love her, but I'm sure she misses you. He thanked me for taking care of her, and I told him I'd see him soon. I went back to Dimples's desk and told him I was leaving. He promised to call me with the results, and I hurried to my car, ready to call it a day. As I opened my door, my phone rang.
Hello? Shelby, Uncle Joey said. I heard you had quite the adventure today. I wanted to make sure you're all right.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Good. From what Ramos told me, you were able to keep me out of the whole thing. I wanted you to know how much I appreciate that.
No problem. I'm just glad Ramos was there and it all worked out.
It seems that we helped each other this time. You got your killer, and I got rid of a competitor. Not bad for a day's work.
That's true.
That's why I was wondering what I should do about Casey. Ramos found him and brought him to me. He says he helped you out, is that right?
Well, he took off my handcuffs, so that's good, and it was mostly my fault that he got shot in the, butt. So how's he doing anyway?
It was just a scratch. Nothing to worry about. But I heard he took a shot at you, and I'm not real happy about that.
Oh, yeah, that's true, I agreed. I think he was a little upset that I hit him with the frying pan and his gun went off and it nicked him in the butt. But I guess everyone makes mistakes, right? I mean, I don't think he should end up dead somewhere, you know? As much as I didn't like what Casey had done, I didn't want to be the one responsible for his demise. Hearing Uncle Joey sigh, I wished I could read minds over the phone. Too bad it didn't work that way.
I think he's showing some remorse, Uncle Joey responded. I just don't know if it's sincere.
Well, if you want my opinion, I think he deserves a second chance, but don't go too easy on him.
I'll take that into consideration, and I'll make sure he knows he has you to thank for any leniency he gets.
Okay. Glad I could help. I let out a breath. And we said our goodbyes. I hoped Casey had learned his lesson, but I wasn't sure about anything. At least he couldn't stay mad at me for hitting him if I'd helped him get off of Uncle Joey's bad side. So that was good. Plus, I didn't think I'd ever run into him again, but if I did, I could always tell him that I'd saved his life. It was a relief to make it home after the day I'd had. Opening the door, I heard a scrambling of paws running my way. Pepper burst into view and ran to me with happy barks and wet kisses. She was a bundle of squirming movement and soft fur. I let out a breath of exhaustion and sat down beside her. As I pet her, she climbed up onto my lap and leaned against me with her head on my shoulder. At that moment, all the tension drained out of me. And I relaxed. That's when I caught her total acceptance and love. She also sensed that I'd had a rough day, and she had wanted to comfort me. How crazy was that? Feeling calmer, I let the peace of the moment enfold me.
Mom, is that you?
Savannah asked.
Yeah, I'm home.
Chapter 7. Later, when Chris and I had a moment alone, I told him everything that had happened. At the end of my narrative, I decided to accentuate the positive, since his brows had lifted right up into his forehead. Dimples called and said the blood on Scorpion's shirt was a match for Molly's, so it looks like we can get Angel released tomorrow. Isn't that great? Chris was more than a little shell-shocked. How did I do it? How did I get into so much trouble? I'd nearly been killed again. What had I just said?
Yeah, That's great news.
At least you don't have to worry about Ethan throwing the case, right?
Yeah.
He focused on that problem instead of my day, and I breathed a sigh of relief.
I'd sure like to know what Strickland has on Ethan.
He caught my gaze, and his brows drew together.
I think it's time you come into the office. I'll ask Ethan what's going on. Even if he denies it, you'll pick it up. No more beating around the bush.
Sounds good to me. I yawned. Ready to go to bed? He nodded, and I continued. Thanks for being such a great husband. His lips quirked up. He knew what I was doing. I was buttering him up so he wouldn't be so upset with me. If he were to make a toast to my day, he'd say, "Here's to another day in the life of Shelby Nichols, where she got shot at, kidnapped, and nearly died." The reality of my life washed over him. What I did was nuts, but since I just kept an innocent man from going to prison, how could he complain? Still, he'd probably get over it faster if I made it up to him. Let's see, what could I do? I could give him a nice back rub or massage his feet, and then maybe make him his favorite dinner. Yeah, that might do the job. Chris, stop that. You're darn lucky to have me for a wife. He smiled sheepishly.
I know.
He tugged me into his arms, grateful I was alive, even if what I did worried him. I relaxed against him. It reminded me of Pepper, her sweet disposition and the comfort she'd offered me. She accepted and loved me, too. I was just about to tell him that, but I didn't think he'd like being compared to a dog. It brought a smile to my lips, knowing this was definitely one of those times I was grateful he couldn't read my mind. The next day, Angel was officially released from jail. With Chris at Angel's side, they'd managed to get his parking tickets taken care of. Even better, he got his impounded car back. Chris called with the good news, telling me that Angel was on his way over to get Pepper. We watched for him through the living room window. Josh and Savannah stood beside me. They were both sad that she was leaving. Pepper joined us, placing her paws on the windowsill, giving each of us that drooling smile and happy to be part of the pack. I told her that Angel would be there soon. She recognized his name, and her heart picked up speed. It sent her tail wagging with excitement. As his car pulled up, she whined and began to bark with barely controlled anticipation. I pulled the door open, and she took off running. Angel came around the car, and she leapt into his arms with a bark of pure joy. She licked him and rubbed against him in a squirming ball of fur. He sat down on the lawn and let her lick him, trying to hold her in his arms. She couldn't hold still, but he buried his face in her fur, and I felt his overwhelming relief to be free. Then Pepper barked and pulled away. She began to run in circles around him, showing her joy. He wiped his eyes and smiled at her antics. Then she ran toward the three of us, standing on the front porch. I picked up her desire to show us to Angel, like we were part of the pack. She ran back and forth between us until we all stood together on the lawn. I introduced him to my kids and invited him inside. We sat at the kitchen table, eating some fresh fruit and exchanged stories about Pepper. Angel picked up how much my kids loved her. He told them he was grateful they'd looked after her so well. "Let's keep in touch," I said. "Why don't you come back tomorrow night for a barbecue? We'll cook up some burgers." He caught my gaze, longing to take me up on it, but not sure how to let us in. He had some tough things to face in the coming days, and it would sure be a lot easier with friends like us. "I'll even make you my famous French Angel Rocky Road dessert in your honor."
"Oh, man," Josh said. "You've got to come now."
Angel still hesitated, wanting badly to say yes, but not quite ready to let his guard down. Molly was killed because of him, and it had wounded his heart.
"What do you think, Pepper?" I asked her. "You want to come visit us?"
She barked with enthusiasm, which sounded like yes to me. It was just the motivation Angel needed to accept my offer.
How can I say no to that?
Good. I told him a time, and we spoke a little longer about his plans. Then he took Pepper and drove away, leaving a feeling of loss and emptiness in our home.
Can we get a dog? Savannah asked.
I knew she was going to ask me that, and I had already discussed it with Chris.
That might be a good idea.
She smiled with happiness. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant for us, but I knew we were ready to add another member to our family, even if it was the furry kind. It also helped to know that I could use my talent to find just the right dog. With joy in my heart, I got ready for the day. I was headed to Chris's office for lunch, but the real reason was to spy on Ethan. Today was the day to find out what was going on with him. If he was in trouble like I suspected, I was just the person to help. I mean, who better to help someone in trouble than a mind reader with connections to the police, a mob boss, and a hitman?
What's next?
Try book one, Carrots, where it all began. Find out how Shelby got her mind-reading ability that changed her life, and how she met Uncle Joey, Dimples, and Ramos. This has been A Midsummer Night's Murder, a Shelby Nichols mystery novella, Shelby Nichols Adventure Series, written by Colleen Helm, narrated by Wendy Tremont King. Copyright 2018 by Colleen Helm. Production copyright 2019 by Colleen Helm.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.